Okay, ready to go.
Good afternoon. The meeting will come to order. The clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of the April 18th meeting before us. Representative Sikora moves the minutes of the April 18th meeting. Any discussion, corrections, additions, changes? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, before we get into the agenda, a couple of notes. We're not going to be taking up the HAVA bill this evening, although that language is within the state government finance bill. The freestanding HAVA bill that was on the schedule did not make it to this committee in time. It is not in our possession because of a deadline issue, so we can't take that up today. Secondly, the last item on the agenda, my bill relating to telecommunications for the blind, we're not going to take up today. So if you're here for that bill, we're not planning on taking it up today. The HAVA bill, we're not taking up the freestanding bill. However, it is all that language within the state government finance bill. With that, I think we will proceed on the three bills we are going to do. Number one, state government finance. Number two, higher education. Number three, ethanol. Representative Seifert moves that House File number 1481 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Seifert.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members. I don't think I'll need these, but maybe for the other chairman whose targets are tougher to work with. Mr. Chairman, the state government finance bill, I believe, is a good bipartisan product that we've worked together and my committee passed out a voice vote yesterday. I am going to have Ms. Roberts go through the financials, and then we can take up amendments. I know that Ways and Means is supposed to only deal with financials, but we all know better than that. So I'll just have Ms. Roberts run through the financials for us quickly.
Ms. Roberts, welcome to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Members, in House File 1481, the total net general fund spending is $476 million. That includes $564.4 million in general fund expenditures, which are offset by $60.8 million in new general fund revenues. And total spending for all funds in the bill is $504.9 million. To get to the details, beginning with the legislature's total appropriation, general fund appropriation is $111 million. This is a 4.9% overall reduction from base. The details are for the Senate, there's an 8.7% reduction to the operating budget, and in addition, there's a cancellation of $3.3 million from the Senate's carry forward. For the House, there's a 2.5% operating budget reduction that's equivalent to $1.3 million. And for the Legislative Coordinating Commission, there's an overall 4.9% reduction. There are a couple change items that I can point out on the spreadsheet on line 57. There's $28,000 in an increased funding for the Mississippi River Parkway Commission. This was House File 633, Representative Dempsey's bill. On line 67 of the spreadsheet, there is a $414,000 reduction from elimination of the Commission on the Economic Status of Women. And finally, the LCC also has a 2.5% operating reduction, which is equivalent to $636,000. Moving on to the constitutional offices, for the governor's office, the total appropriation is $6.99 million. That's a 2.5% reduction from the office base. For the state auditor, the total general fund appropriation for the biennium is $18,569,000. This is an increase over the auditor's base of $1.95 million. And what this relates to is a $2 million restoration of audit practice staff. And I should note that because the state auditor fully recovers its costs for audit practices, there is an offsetting revenue at the bottom of the spreadsheet when I'll mention when we get to revenue. So the net cost to the committee's target was zero for this item. Moving on to the Attorney General. The total general fund appropriation for that office is $44,565,000, and this is a 2.5% reduction to the Office of the Attorney General. And the final constitutional office is the Secretary of State. Again, the general fund appropriation for this office is $11.9 million. That is a 0.6% reduction to the Secretary of State's office because there was a calculation of a 2.5% reduction to the office, but it was calculated only on the administrative portion of the office, not on the election division. And I should note also that this bill does include in Article... In another article, I think it's in Article 8, the HAVA bill, which has additional appropriations to the Secretary of State, but those are from the Special Revenue Fund that currently, where the federal HAVA funds have been deposited. Moving on to the state agencies, beginning on line 199, the first is the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. The total budget for the recommended budget for that office is $1.4 million, and again, this is a 2.5% decrease from the office's budget, base budget. Another item under the Campaign Finance Board is the change to the public subsidy program. Under current law, this program is funded through an open general fund appropriation equivalent to $3.9 million. The bill changes the funding for this program. There will no longer be a general fund appropriation. Instead, the program will be funded directly by the taxpayers who check off on their tax form that they want to make a contribution, so it would either increase their liability or decrease their refund, and the entire program is switched to a special revenue fund. The next agency on the spreadsheet is the State Board of Investment. There is a change to the financing of the board. It does not actually represent a decrease for the board. Currently, the board is funded entirely through a direct general fund appropriation, and then they charge their costs for investments for certain funds back to those funds, and those funds are deposited in the general fund. This bill is making a change so that the investment board will charge directly to the funds and be funded through a special revenue fund. There's a small remaining appropriation of $434,000 for the general fund, which is related to their activities for actually investing general fund, the general fund dollars. Moving on to the Office of Administrative Hearings, the major funding for this office that's included directly in this bill is the $14.8 million from the Workers' Compensation Fund, which is for the workers' compensation judges in that office. I should note there is a new general fund item for this office on line 260, which represents the transfer of the Municipal Boundary Adjustment Program from the Department of Administration for $524,000. Moving on to the Department of Administration, which begins on line 268 of the spreadsheet. The first program within the department is the Technology Services Program, where the Office of Technology is currently located. The bill reduces the funding for the Office of Technology by 27.3% to leave an appropriation of $3.6 million. The next program is the State Facility Services. The total funding for this program is $28.5 million, which shows up on the spreadsheet as a 29.3% increase, but this increase is really due entirely to, you'll note on line 303 of the spreadsheet, there's a $6.7 million one-time appropriation for agency relocation costs. This was a recommendation originally included in the governor's capital budget recommendations, but the decision was to move this general fund item to this committee. In addition, there are operational reductions throughout this program in the Department of Administration. The next program in the Department is State and Community Services. Again, the total general fund appropriation for this program is $5.1 million, which is a 35.6% decrease from the base for this program. Some of the change items, in addition to the general operating reductions, there is a reduction of 68% to the LIMIT program, that's the Land Management Information Program. The committee did restore $200,000 of one-time funding in comparison to the governor's recommendation, but there still is a significant reduction to that office. Another significant change is on line 359 of the spreadsheet. There it eliminates all funding for the local planning assistance activity within the department. And finally, I should note, on line 366 of the spreadsheet, the committee did not fund the faith-based initiative that was in the governor's recommendation. Moving on to the final program within the Department of Administration's Operations Administrative Management Services. Again, there is the total appropriation is $9.2 million. That represents a 3.5% decrease from the program's base. There are operational reductions throughout this program, and in addition, there's one spending item on line 388, $100,000 in one-time grant money for House File 376. This would represent Erickson's bill for assistive technology grants. Finally, within the Department of Administration, but only because they are the fiscal agent for these grants, is the public broadcasting grants, and these begin on line 427 of the spreadsheet. The first program is grants for public television. The total recommended funding is $2.7 million. This represents a 2.5% decrease in those grants. For public radio, the first item is the AMPERS grant, and the total recommended funding is $610,000. That is also a 2.5% reduction. And finally, all funding for Minnesota Public Radio has been eliminated in the bill, so that is a savings of $390,000 for the biennium. Moving on to the next state agency, the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board, the recommendation is $524,000 for the biennium, which is no change from the base. The next state agency is the Department of Finance. Their total recommended general fund is $29.6 million, and this represents a 2.7% reduction from their base funding, or a reduction of $816,000. The next staff agency is the Department of Employee Relations. Their general fund appropriation, direct appropriation, is $11.2 million. This is a decrease from the base of $1.2 million, which represents 9.3% of the department's general fund base. Finally, moving on to the last major staff agency is the Department of Revenue. The total recommended general fund appropriation for the department is $194.5 million. This is an increase of 3.7%, and it is a net of two things that are going on in this recommendation. First, there is a reduction of $6 million to the department's non-compliance activities. That reduction is offset by $13.3 million in funding for the new compliance initiative, which is expected to bring in $68 million in new general fund revenues. The next agency is the Department of Military Affairs. The recommended general fund appropriation for that department is $35.2 million. This is a $10.6 million increase over the base and represents three items: $70,000 in one-time funding for the National Guard youth camp. That's on line 676 of the spreadsheet. That was Representative Sanders' bill. And then two change items that are in the enlistment incentives program on line 685, $7.7 million to fully fund the tuition reimbursement program for the National Guard, and then an additional $3 million for the reenlistment incentive program. This would be a new incentive program for those National Guard members that are not eligible or not interested in the tuition reimbursement funding. The next agency is the Department of Veterans Affairs. Their total recommended general fund spending is $8.7 million. This is a 7.6% increase over the base and represents three change items. There is a $10,000 biennial increase for Vietnam veterans claims processing, and in addition, there is one-time funding for two bills that the committee heard First, there is $100,000 in one-time funding for Representative Blaine's bill related to vocational rehabilitation and chemical dependency grants. In addition, there is $500,000 in one-time funding for Representative Mullery's bill for outreach to underserved veterans groups. Moving on to beginning on line 768 of the spreadsheet, there are three small veteran service organizations that receive general fund appropriations in the bill. This is the VFW, the Military Order of the Purple Heart, and the Disabled American Vets. Their total funding is $326,000 between the three of them, and this represents a 46% increase across the three small organizations for increased funding for veterans claims processing. Beginning on line 783, there are two agencies that are funded through the Special Revenue Fund. The first is the Lawful Gambling Control Board. Their recommended appropriation is $5.6 million. This is a 10.8% increase and includes funding for additional staff to do compliance reviews and some technology upgrades for the board. The Minnesota Racing Commission has a recommended funding of $1.5 million from the Special Revenue Fund. That's a 79% increase in the commission's funding for the biennium, and does include funding found in House File 2044, Representative Finstead's bill, which funds costs that the board is incurring for the track, the potential track in Anoka County, and those costs are being funded through an interim license fee so that the track at Canterbury does not have to fund the costs related to the track in Anoka. Beginning on line 802, the Amateur Sports Commission, House File 1481 eliminates all funding for the Amateur Sports Commission. In addition, it eliminates or repeals the $1.5 million appropriation for the Target Center. Beginning on line 816, the Black Minnesotans Council, there is a 2.5% budget reduction to the council. So their total recommended funding is $550,000. Similarly, for the Chicano Latino Affairs Council, there's a recommended 2.5% budget reduction. Their total funding would then be $536,000. For the Asian Pacific Minnesotans Council, again, a 2.5% reduction for a total funding of $474,000. And the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council would have a recommended funding of $940,000, which is also a 2.5% reduction. On line 860 of the spreadsheet, the contingent accounts, which is an account that is available for emergencies within the state, there is a recommendation of $100,000 for the general fund contingent account. This is a reduction of $900,000 from the governor's recommendation. I'll move on to the state retirement funds. There are three general fund appropriations that are tracked against the state government target. The first is the Minnesota State Retirement System, $2.4 million for legislators' retirement and constitutional officers' retirement. And I want to make clear that's not for current legislators. That is for former legislators who were in the former pension plan where the state simply appropriated their benefits each year as they occurred. So that is not the current system. The next item is the Minneapolis Employees Retirement Fund. There's $16.1 million for that item. And finally, in the last pension item is $37.5 million for first class teacher state aid. No, and those pension funds are all at the governor's recommendation, the same as in the forecast. Moving to the final pages of the spreadsheet beginning on line 920, you can see the total appropriations by fund. Again, that's the general fund appropriation, recommended appropriations, $527.6 million. There are some appropriations from other funds, as I noted, for the gambling organizations, from the Special Revenue Fund, for the Office of Administrative Hearings, Workers' Comp, Judges, and some other minor appropriations from other funds. Moving down to line 970, I'll quickly go through the changes to the general fund revenues, which are offsetting some of the spending in this bill. The first item is cancellation of $1.76 million from the unspent funds from the Electronic Real Estate Task Force. The second item on line 971 is the $68 million from the Department of Revenue's new compliance initiative. On line 972, there is cancellation of $1.3 million in the remaining funds that are in the unclaimed prize fund that have not been transferred. And I should also point out that there's a corresponding transfer to the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund on line 985. The next item is on line 973. Here's the offsetting revenue from the state auditor to restore their audit practices offsets the increased appropriations to the office. There is $1.9 million in federal reimbursement. This is related to the agency relocation costs that are included in this bill for the Department of Human Services. On line 975, $5 million is transferred or canceled from the facilities repair and replacement account within the Department of Administration. An additional $2 million is a one-time transfer from the building code account that is currently in the Department of Administration. And finally, there is $6.44 million in from the sale of surplus state lands. I should note that is also backed up by the potential for state agency operating cuts if these revenues do not occur over the biennium. And so finally, on the last page of the spreadsheet, again, just for the reconciliation to the target, the total general fund spending in the bill, the direct appropriations are $527.6 million. There's additional carry forward and open appropriations, bringing the total general fund spending to $564 million, offset by the $88 million in new revenues. That brings the bill into balance at the target of $476 million.
Mr. Chairman, we'll stand for questions.
Okay. Well, members, we have a number of amendments. I wonder if we shouldn't get it. Unless someone has a specific question to the bill, I would suggest we go into amendments. Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just want to understand the budget sheets here. So is this Plan A and Plan... Is there Plan... This is Plan A.
We're same under both, Representative Paymar. We are not, Mr. Chairman, we are not...
Representative Seifert.
Our committee target was not treated differently, so this is one of the... This is the only option. This is the only... We had the same target under both, so bringing this bill up tomorrow, for people who are worried about the gaming issue, this bill is treated the same under both situations. Same target. We didn't get any more money out of the Racino issue.
Mr. Chair, I thought that maybe I misunderstood on the House floor. I thought that eliminating the Racino, that state government finance was the one that was going to take the big hit if gambling wasn't included.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymar, the reason I was scurrying around on the floor is because I was getting cut $14 million with or without Racino under the same plan. And so my committee, I think on a bipartisan basis, did the best it could with the money that we had. There would be a lot of things that would be different in my bill if we had the $14 million that originally was under the original plan. But no, it's... We had to cut $14 million below the governor's recommendations because of the floor amendment going to K-12.
Okay, one more question.
Representative Paymar.
Representative Seifert, the governor had $414,000 for the biennium for the Council on Economic Status of Women, and you eliminated the whole program. Was there, I think that's what I'm reading. Is
yeah,
that correct, and why?
That's a portion of the $14 million, Representative Paymar. And amateur sports, and the Target Center, and the 2.5% across the board on public broadcasting, minority councils, and those are all things that our committee had to basically delve in and scrape nickels out of the couch to get that $14 million gleaned out.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Paymar.
Representative Seifert, Are any of the activities of the Council on the Economic Status of Women being shifted to any other agency?
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I know some of the things the League of Women Voters does is similar. There's, you know, other activities that people can do. They generally will answer legislators' requests for information, which we have House research to do, so I suppose you could say that. But with the fact that our target was cut that deeply, we just, you know, struggle to find money everywhere. So it's generally, that's just, it's three FTEs in the basement of the building or ground floor that won't be here next year.
All right, other questions for Representative Seifert, or we can move to amendments, then we'll go back to the bill after the amendments.
Mr. Chair, and then come back to.
Okay. Let's see, we've got a number of amendments, members. I think I'll go to Representative Osment first. Representative Osment has the A46 amendment. Representative Osment moves the A46 amendment. Representative Osment, can you describe the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. In the bill on page 30, section 21 has a limitation on the administrative penalty orders to no more than $100. And that really takes away the reason to have administrative penalty orders. They're seeking to have monetary penalties to establish a consequence for violating laws, and penalties are designed to remove any economic benefit from a non-compliant party received from violating our state laws. And this provision puts an unreasonable limitation on that, and I'd hopefully you'll support this amendment, which would take this out of the bill.
Mr. Chairman,
I've
consulted with my ranking member, Representative Hilty, and we are okay with this amendment. We can do it by voice vote right now.
Discussion to the amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A46 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The A46 amendment is adopted. Members, I think next I'll go to the A54 amendment, which is an amendment of mine. Chair moves the A54 amendment. Members, in the bill there are two provisions relating to, in the HAVA Secretary of State section, relating to annexations. Basically, they prohibit a municipality from annexing out someone who would be running for office in between the time period of filing and the election. I understand there are other ways of dealing with this, and so members, I think that this would be something, and I've talked to the Secretary of State's office, that would be good to remove from this bill. Any discussion to the A54 amendment?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Seifert.
I visited with Representative Hilty about this, and we're okay with this amendment. We can do it by voice vote.
All right. All in favor of the A54 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The A54 amendment is adopted. Let's see. Let me check on the next amendment. Okay. Representative Dempsey, I believe, has an oral amendment. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The oral amendment that I have is, if you turn to page 13 and section 8 begins the the area that in the bill that I want deleted, but the language is on the next page, page 14. Lines 3 and 4. So on page 13, delete section age, and that's lines on page 14, 3 and 4. And what basically this does is keeps the present authority with the tribal chiefs. And it is not the authority then of the governor. I've checked with the author of the bill, and I believe he is not opposed to this amendment.
Okay, Representative Dempsey moves an oral amendment, page 14, delete the new language on lines 3 and 4, or delete section 8. Any discussion? Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, I did talk to Representative Dempsey. This came up at the last second. Representative Hilty seems to be okay with it. I believe we talked about this as a possibility, so I think it's okay to do this one. This one.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wouldn't we have to delete more than Section 8? It looks like it goes on into Section 9, 10, and 11.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, those are the other councils. We had testimony in committee yesterday about the duties being much different for the Indian Affairs Council. They are based in Bemidji, have unique duties different than the other councils, which do have co-location abilities and so forth, and the fact that the tribes are doing the appointing for what governs them, and the other ones are for other councils. And so I think for now I'd like to just stick with the Dempsey Amendment.
Okay. To the Dempsey Amendment, Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, although I support the Dempsey Amendment, I do think that it's very ironic that we would only be doing it for the Indian Affairs Council. All four of the councils, right now the governor appoints each one of the council members. And for members that were here in 2001 when we did the racial profiling here, many of the councils objected to what we ended up with, and to the point where they were threatened and strong-armed, brought into rooms and things of that nature. And under this provision, it would make it quite easy for the governor just to remove the executive director when they don't follow the will of the governor. And, I'm not quite sure if the council, then actually, Representative Wagenius was here, and some of the other members. I don't believe the councils were put together to serve at the whim of the governor.
To the Dempsey Amendment, any other discussion?
What number is
that? Okay, seeing no discussion, Representative Dempsey renews his oral amendment, his motion to delete Section 8. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. All right, members, let's next go to Representative Beard, the 683 amendment. Representative Beard moves the 683 amendment. Representative Beard, can you describe the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members. A couple days ago, I did the House Bill 899, which authorizes the State Auditor's Office to intervene or be the repository or recipient of townships, cities, counties, school boards, and so on that believe they have a state rule or mandate, and this is on page 19 of the bill, that may cost them the ability to cooperate with other units of government to effectively serve their citizens, mostly either through time, service, or money. And rather than going to court to ask for waivers or relief, the auditor's office has graciously agreed to establish that within their own employment base in their own office, and they're going to handle this internally. We did delete, I noticed that this has been put into the bill and adopted as part of this omnibus bill, the ability to make grants to help units of government save money has been deleted, which is fine with the state auditor, is fine with me as the author. However, in the whole discussion, our friends from AFSCME came with this amendment and asked if we could insert this language, which would, in a rare case where maybe an agency employee or somebody needs to be represented by an exclusive bargaining agent, that AFSCME's agency could be represented at the hearing or in the discussions. This is fine with me, it's fine with the auditor's office, and it's fine with the author of the Senate companion. So I think we've got everybody on board. I'd appreciate your support. I'll stand for questions if you need to.
A discussion on the 683 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I support the amendment, and Representative Hilty, I believe, does as well.
Okay. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the 683 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The 683 amendment is adopted. Members, let's next move to Representative Solberg, the A51 amendment. Representative Solberg moves the A51 amendment. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, During the committee process, there was a amendment put on section 15 on page 21 that deals with the Attorney General's office and the ability of the Attorney General to have different fees and going into contracts with the legal services outside of the Attorney General's office. I think all of us have expressed some concern about this, particularly as it relates to maybe some of the expenses that the Attorney General may want to contract out with bond counsel and other activities. In working with the author of the bill and others in the committee along with the Attorney General, this is okay with the Attorney General to do this little bit of action. If there is a contract outside of the Attorney General's office where the expenses or fees are can reasonably be expected to exceed $1 million, then the Attorney General will submit that to the Legislative Advisory Committee for comment. The Attorney General supports this language.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty and I have reviewed this, and we agree. The committee kind of slogged its way through this yesterday, and I'd like to have kind of bipartisan sign-off on this, and I am fine with it.
Now the discussion of the A51 amendment. Seeing no further discussion. Oh, Representative Abrams, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think it's a good amendment. I think that it should be on the record that to a large extent the state can't pick who their bond counsel is because when you're giving a legal opinion as to the authority of the state in order to issue the bonds, the purchaser of the bonds is going to look to who the bond counsel is. You just can't pick, go through the yellow pages and call somebody up. They're a highly specialized area. And before anybody thinks that some attorney is going to get a $1 million fee, I point out that probably the first thing that the bond counsel does is contact an insurance company in order to get malpractice coverage for that issuance. And a very, very large portion of that fee is farmed out to some insurance company on the opinion. So I think it's a good amendment, but I think that you always have to tread carefully in some of the things that the Attorney General's office does. And this is something that's crucial for the state. I'm still nervous, Representative Solberg, about the 20-day wait, but hopefully the Attorney General's office has signed off on it, and I'm okay with it.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Solberg,
I had that same kind of concern at first, but I think if there is some additional contracts or at least this gives it the LAC to meet within the 20 days or give an opinion within the 20 days and not have it hang out there for a year. So far the Attorney General's office is kind of comfortable with this language.
Other discussion? Seeing no other discussion, all in favor of the A51 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion prevails. The A51 amendment is adopted. Next, we'll take up the A52 amendment. Representative Vandeveer moves the A52 amendment. Representative Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the flag bill that passed the House, I think 131-0. We'd like to put it in here, send it over. Appreciate your support.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, I haven't found out about this till this afternoon, but I just want to ask Representative Vandeveer, is this the exact same form it was when the House unanimously passed it?
It is, Mr. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, I'm fine with it.
Other discussion of the A52 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A52 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A52 amendment is adopted. Members, we have three, I believe, HABA-related amendments, and I think they're Representative Hilty's. Representative Hilty, if they are all three of yours, which would you like to offer first?
Mr. Chair, I think the one that has been distributed first is the A56 amendment.
All right. Representative Hilty moves the A56 amendment. Representative Hilty, please tell us about the A56 amendment.
Mr. Chair, this is an amendment that originated with the Office of the Secretary of State. It amends language in a HABA bill basically to accommodate a new device that is available that would meet the have a requirements for providing equipment for disabled voters. Because this device would be hardwired to a tabulator rather than generating a separate optical scan ballot, the language needed to be changed to allow for what is described in the bill as an electronic ballot marker rather than a paper ballot.
Mr. Chairman, I'm okay with the amendment.
Discussion 2 of the A56 amendment. Representative Kelleher.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, I believe that this is something that we talked about earlier about the way that the vote tally is transferred. And this isn't certainly my area of expertise here in this committee. I think we're outside of the realm of financial issues, again, in ways and means. But I am curious. I understand there may be a couple of counties who are already transfer these vote tallies, and one of them may be the county I live in and represent part of, which is Hennepin County. I'm very curious about their reaction to this amendment because I am wholly unaware that this is an issue right now. I understand the issue about if they're using wireless technology to do it, but I can't particularly see a problem if they're using a hardwired system to transmit. So, Representative Hilty, or I also am curious if someone's here from the county who could react to this for us.
Is there Representative Hilty?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelleher, we carefully crafted this language. It does not preclude the electronic transmittal of results, in other words, of the information. What it does preclude is the electronic transmittal of the actual data from the machine, which is something that we have seen over and over in other parts of the country is capable. If you open up the entire system to basically something that's capable of being hacked into, the entire system becomes vulnerable. So this does not preclude electronic transmittal of the results. You can report the results electronically by any means. What it does prohibit is opening up the system in a way that would render it vulnerable to hacking or manipulation from some outside entity.
Mr. Chair, I do have someone from Hennepin County. If you just wanted, Representative Keller, just let members know on the elections pieces that are in this bill, Representative De La Forest and Representative Hilty were my two members for, that were on the elections division. And if I didn't have sign-off, people couldn't get things in the bill, including the Secretary of State and others who really wanted some things in here where we gave both, I gave both sides veto power to keep this bill decent. And so I feel good that you would like to hear from someone that I think is comfortable with it.
Welcome to the Ways and Means Committee, sir. Could you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Maeda. I work for Hennepin County Elections. I haven't seen this before now, but as long as it doesn't have to do with the transfer of actual results electronically, I think we're fine with this.
Okay. Other questions for the witness?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess with that sort of
Representative Kelleher.
Half-hearted endorsement, I have kind of a concern when... I mean, we have a very good system in Hennepin County. I certainly don't want to be doing anything here today that screws up the system that we use right now. I'm very concerned about this when we're doing kind of what seems to be major policy pieces right now. So,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hilty.
Representative Kelleher. This is language that I spent half the day discussing with the Secretary of State's office. They're comfortable with this language. I have discussed this language with national experts. We have communicated with David Dill, who is the founder of the Verified Voter organization. I had conversations, the telephone conversation today with Bev Harris from Black Box Voting and with an expert in Washington State. We worked this language out. I can guarantee you that it is sound language that anybody pays attention to these issues will tell you is absolutely necessary to protect the integrity of the system. If it's in conflict with Hennepin County, I will be happy to do anything that we can to craft language that satisfies their concerns. But this, I guarantee you, is the right thing to do.
Representative Hamilton and Greiling. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Seifert, just so I'm clear, is this are all townships going to be required to have an optical scan machine? And if so, what will they be charged?
Representative Seifert.
Well, Mr. Chair, we're getting into this rat's nest of Secretary of State stuff, so I'm going to turn over to Representative Hilty on this.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hamilton, no, the have a bill that's included in this omnibus bill provides for counties to establish their own working plans. What the have a bill requires is that each precinct have a machine that's capable of accommodating disabled voters. It does not require that each precinct have an optical scan machine, and some counties, I'm sure, will opt to continue with their central count and just use the optical scan machine to generate ballots that are then centrally counted. And there is money in the bill that is adequate to cover the expenses of those disabled machines.
Okay. Representative Larson, then Greiling. Sorry, I skipped over Representative Larson before. Representative Larson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Seifert and Representative Hilty, I guess I have some of the same concerns that Representative Kelleher has relayed, and I'm not given a lot of comfort by folks from Hennepin County that that they feel 100% confident that this doesn't have an unintended consequence. And so this just makes me nervous, and I think that, you know, we're doing an awful lot of work here in an area that I admittedly don't, I'm not an expert in, but it could profoundly affect my county, and I'm concerned about that.
Mr. Chair, the county person has been reading it over again and again, and I think he said he does feel very comfortable with it now after he's looked it over twice.
Do you want to make a statement again, sir?
Yeah, the more I read the language over, it's clear that it doesn't have to do with our actual transmitting of results, so I would be comfortable with what's in here.
Representative Larson.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, Representative Seifert. What I'm perplexed about is if you've done all this work and it's so sound and everything, and it, you know, may well be if we don't see anything the matter with that. I'm wondering, why is it being done at the last minute? Why wasn't it done in committee where we would all be so much more trusting of everything that has been done?
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Representative Greiling, the reason that this amendment is coming forward is that it came forward at the request of some of the counties who became aware of a new piece of equipment. The language, the basic language that's in this amendment is already in the bill. This is amending that language basically to accommodate that piece of equipment that doesn't function in the same way that all of the equipment that was being contemplated did. And because that piece of equipment that we're attempting to accommodate here is connected to another piece of equipment, which was not the case before, the language that I put in here is intended to make clear that while that connection is acceptable, we want to make sure that that doesn't open the door to broader connections that no one would intend or think was a good idea.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seifert, it was a brilliant idea on your part to include Representative Hilty in your deliberation process.
I think we're ready to vote, Mr.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if my question's for the author or Representative Hilty. But Representative Hilty, you brought up that each precinct will be required to have one of the new machines. I actually have a precinct that's had one voter in the last two elections. Do we make, and there's another voting place in less than a mile away, are we making arrangements to where we won't have a county by a machine for one voter every other election?
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McNamara, the bill provides for that to be at the discretion of the counties. It provides for their ability to combine polling places with fewer than a threshold number of voters, and certainly that would be the case here. And I might mention also that there is in this bill another provision for permanent absentee balloting that would probably satisfy the concerns of that particular precinct.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, in this case, the other voting place less than a mile away is in a different county. Do we allow them to cross county lines for the vote?
Representative Hilty.
I'm not sure the answer to that, but
we do.
I believe that that's the case.
Representative Cipher.
Mr. Chair, I believe that we do. For proximity, we're trying to give maximum flexibility, so we try to exercise a little common sense, unlike what the federal government's making us do in a lot of cases.
Other discussion of the A56 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A56 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A56 amendment is adopted. Representative Hilty, which one do you want next?
I have the A31 amendment.
Representative Hilty moves the A31 amendment. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This also is an amendment that was brought forward by the Secretary of State. Because the...
excuse me. Could we have some quiet in the room? People are having a hard time hearing Representative Hilty.
Because, Mr. Chair, the HAVA bill, the federal elections bill, will require the purchase of new equipment, and in order to achieve the kind of compatibility that some jurisdictions might want to achieve, they will be replacing equipment that is functional and in itself, depending on the overall configuration of the system, would meet the requirements of HAVA. And what this bill or what this amendment provides for is that equipment that is abandoned essentially because it's replaced by newer equipment be made available to other counties that might be able to incorporate it into their system.
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty, why can't a county recoup some of their costs if it's appropriate?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I think I would like to ask someone from the Secretary of State's office to address that question.
Something I think Mr. Black can very briefly explain that.
Yes, also.
All right. Mr. Black, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Bert Black. I'm a business and legal analyst with the Office of the Secretary of State. The cost of the new equipment should be fully covered by federal funds, so there is no out-of-pocket outlay for equipment in the round of purchasing of new equipment. We did negotiate this with the counties, and everybody was agreed that we could share, that this equipment could be shared with other counties who, in fact, may not be using these kinds of automated machines at this time, but might want to if they can obtain these at no charge. So the counties have been consulted, and we have agreement on this matter. Thank you.
Representative Hubbard.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair and Representative or Mr. Black, didn't the taxpayers pay for it in the first place, though? I mean, even a dead battery, you get some kind of like rebate or court charge for value.
Mr. Chair, I guess I would liken it this way: the machines are bought generally with federal funds, and if a county has done use, it's not bought with their funds; it's bought with federal funds, and so the thought process is it's like a grandpa giving you a car. With the hope that when you're done with it, your younger brother can get it, that you don't charge your younger brother $1,000 for the car because grandpa bought it for you. This is the federal government buying our voting equipment. Dakota County's done with their old junk. They can give it to Traverse County because Uncle Sam, let's say, Uncle Sam bought this for us, and we're not going to have another county profit at what the federal government's intent is that as many voting machines of compliance be out into the counties as much as possible. That's how I would use the analogy.
So, Mr. Representative Holbert, for clarification purposes, then, all voting equipment held by counties currently that may be given up was paid for by federal dollars.
Mr. Black.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Holbert, the what will happen is that if a county gets new equipment, the equipment that is being replaced, and depending on the county plan, it may be different equipment in different counties. That equipment, the old equipment, will become available, and other counties can make a claim on that. If they receive new voting equipment, the old equipment must be made available.
Other discussion to the amendment. Seeing no further discussion. All in favor of the A31 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Next we have the A55 amendment. Representative Hilty moves the A55 amendment. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is another amendment from the Secretary of State. My understanding is that recently funds have become available from the federal government to allow the states to provide grants to upgrade access for disabled voters at polling places. And
excuse me, Representative Hilty, again, let's have some quiet here if we can. Go ahead, Representative Hilty.
This amendment would allow the Secretary of State to accept those federal funds and distribute them.
Discussion of the A55 amendment.
I agree with the amendment. This actually is a ways and means issue because it allows federal appropriations.
Found one.
All right.
1 out of 3 ain't bad.
All in favor of the A55 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A55 amendment is adopted. All right, Representative Hilty, are you done with your HAVA amendments?
I am, Mr. Chair.
All right, members, we've got some other amendments that were handed out. I think I'll go next to the A57 amendment. This is the Chair's amendment. The Chair will move the A57 amendment. And in moving it, I had a discussion with Representative Solberg that he would prefer that the repealer date be 2007, and so I would incorporate a 2007 date instead of a 2006 date into this amendment. And members, what this does, and I'll call up the Commissioner of Administration in a moment for some testimony on this. What this does is it sunsets the Design Selection Board in 2 years. There have been some irregularities that have come to light in the letting of certain contracts by the Designer Selection Board, and I think that it would be good if we put a sunset on it so those irregularities can receive some further investigation. And I'm wondering if I could have the Commissioner of Administration come forward or someone from the Department to talk about that.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Seifert.
Just a comment. I didn't know about some of the irregularities until lately, but this board handles a lot of money in contracts and who gets what. And if we've had irregularities, I think a political spanking is well-deserved and that we need to air this out in the interim. But if we have a firm date on sunsetting, I think that will get people's attention. So I would be supportive of this. And I do feel more comfortable with 07 than 06. So we have time to review this in the next legislative session. If the commissioner wants to come forward, I think that would be helpful for members here. And the main issue of the timing of this being so late is because of finding out about some of the irregularities. I didn't actually know until yesterday about some of the problems.
Commissioner, welcome to the Ways and Means Committee. Could you state your name for the record? Give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dana Badgerow, Commissioner of Administration. Much as Representative Seifert has just indicated, there have been some problem issues with the Designer Selection Board of late, some process issues that they've had, some lack of business discipline in what they've done. Like him, I don't particularly feel it's worthwhile to air those here in this meeting. I think it's a fabulous idea if we can take this time to revisit the way in which they operate, put some discipline and process into what they do, and I think we can avoid these issues going forward.
Well, Representative Rookavina, and I guess Commissioner Badger, I think it would be useful for members, if we can, to go into a bit more detail, at least about what some of the, shall we say, allegations are.
Yes.
Is that your question, too, Representative Rookavina?
Sure, I was going to say, I mean, if we're voting on an amendment to spank somebody, I want to know, you know, what kind of battle we should use, because, you know, I mean, and I don't know why, usually when I ground somebody, it's immediately, not 3 years out, my kids, so maybe we could get a little...
They're too old. Now, I think we do need some more information, too, Commissioner. I would agree with Representative Rookavina.
All right, Mr. Chair, Representative Rookavina, in the most recent instance, which we'll just use as an example, the Designer Selection Board was asked to select, on behalf of Military Affairs, a mechanical commissioning agent, which right at the outset probably doesn't meet the definition of a designer. So there's issue one. But issue two was that they were undecided amongst the two finalists, and the two finalists made their presentations and a vote was taken. Six members were present. The vote was 3-3. The chair then voted again and broke the tie. So, Mr. Chair, we had to void that selection and are now redelegating this to Military Affairs so that they might make the selection.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's
Representative Rookavina.
That just happened in tax committee a little while
ago. I was going to say that's on the city
council. I moved to put the tax committee in your amendment. We'll abolish that.
Well, Representative Rookavina, you're your usual witty self.
Is that sufficient?
One amendment at a time, Representative Rookavina. I guess, Representative Rookavina, do you have any other questions about the Designer Selection Board?
Fully prepared to vote on it.
Any other discussion to the 857 amendment? Members, I just want to say, I, as the author of this amendment, really feel this and some of the other allegations I have heard are serious and that this bears some serious looking into. With that, all in favor of the 857 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Let's see. I think I'll... Representative Abler, I don't see. Representative Vandeveer, the A47 amendment. Representative Vandeveer moves the A47 amendment. Representative Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a couple oral amendments to this. Would you like me to do those now?
Please do those now, yes.
Thank you. On page 2, lines 35 and 36, delete approves a written request from and insert accepts by a vote of the task force a written certification of compliance by.
It's let's see, Representative Abler, Vandeveer rather, and how many other, what other oral amendments do you have? Is there just one other one, or do you have more?
One that puts the same thing in a different place and then a short one deleting something.
Okay.
I could get this typed up if we wanted to. Would you rather
I think, Representative Vandeveer, if we can, we do have at least one other amendment. If there's a way to get this typed up and copied off, that might be better.
I'll try.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Vandeveer. Representative Vandeveer temporarily withdraws his amendment. I'm going to go to the Abler amendment. Representative Abler moves the 697 amendment. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This has to do with reverse auctions, and somewhere along the way, admin brought this to me, and they want to really see if they can save some money on engineering designs. Currently, we spend $100 million annually on engineering and architectural services, And if it seems like if this is a good idea for some of these other departments, it's a good idea for this. This would just delete the striking of that language out of this section 40. So I hope we can support that.
So, Representative Endebier, as I understand it, right now we allow the use of the reverse auction method for engineering design. The bill says we proposes to say we can't use it for engineering design, and your amendment proposes to say we still can use it. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Discussion to the Abler Amendment. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I would oppose this amendment. This is something that actually I brought up for discussion in the State Government Finance Committee because the Department Administration had brought this forward. But as Representative De La Forest pointed out, in that committee, what this really is about is fencing out our local vendors. So while it's possible that some money might be saved in reverse auction and these matters, what would probably amount to is the lowest bidder going to larger, most likely out-of-state firms, and in essence fencing out some of our local companies. And I think that viewed from that perspective, while there might be some gain to the Department of Administration in the overall economy of the state, it's not likely to happen.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, I would also oppose the amendment. We heard some testimony and some concerns expressed again by Representative De La Forest in the committee that this also would probably fence out some of the smaller firms, particularly in rural Minnesota, that are wanting to do some work for us. So I think, again, I would hope that we would not adopt this amendment and keep the current language in place.
I know this is a new issue for some people. I wonder, while we don't normally take testimony, if we could have the Commissioner of Administration back and maybe briefly talk about this or answer any questions people might have. Welcome back, Commissioner Bedrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just quickly, a reverse auction is a little bit like an eBay in reverse. What we do is we qualify the prospective vendors with their qualifications, and then we receive their prices, and then we open up an auction bidding on with a piece of software, starting with the most recent bids. And vendors have an opportunity, although they're not required to do so, to lower their prices until we receive the last lowest price. We keep the bidding open until we have received no further bid. We have thus far saved $5 million for the state of Minnesota through the use of reverse auction techniques. This was a practice that is used widely in the private sector, including Target Corporation. We were given the statutory authority several years ago to expand that from goods to include computer services and engineering services. To date, we have not used the technique yet on engineering services, but we have used it quite effectively, most recently on computer services. For example, PrimNet saved $41,000 in contract costs, and that award was made to a local small business. PCA saved $40 an hour in consulting fees. Reverse auctions do not lead to substandard vendors. They do not lead to fencing out local vendors or small business vendors. We are committed, and we have worked with the engineering community to the prudent use of this technique. I think the example is often used, you don't want the low-cost brain surgeon, but we do not allow anyone to even get into the reverse auction until they have met the minimum qualifications. So we have qualified vendors who have submitted prices, and they have one more opportunity if they choose to reduce their prices.
Discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, I have worked, the committee has worked on this bill together. Representative De La Forest, Representative Hilty brought this forward together. The committee felt, and I thought that the testimony we've heard and the folks that stopped by the office have given fairly good reason that I support, first of all, I support reverse auction. And I believe the $5 million in savings is a wonderful thing. This has not been used for engineering design, but I think a case has been made to me that, yes, you may save a little bit of money by bringing an outfit out of New York City to do our work, but if we can get an engineering company from the Iron Range or the Minneapolis area to do it, and we're supporting local jobs and that percolates through the economy, that consideration should be also given. So I'm going to defend the committee's work on this bill, and I'm going to ask that the amendment be opposed. But if the committee makes a different decision, obviously I have nothing to do with that, but I'm going to defend my committee members on a bipartisan basis on this amendment. And I think that if it's something we need to have further discussion on, we'll do it in conference committee.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think my question is for the commissioner. Commissioner, you know, it's one thing to buy paper or Diet Coke like Target does or tissue paper. And even I can go so long as to order some services like you talked about and saving an hourly rate. But when you start talking about design service of a structural or a bridge or something really significant, and to think you're going to reverse auction that, I think we better be careful. And I appreciate the chairman's point that we need to move carefully in this way. And I really don't think that this is, I think this is going too fast, too quick to a new thing.
Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a good idea, and I'm not sure the time has come for this amendment. I can kind of sense the will of the committee, and I do respect the committee process. I'm sensitive, however, we're making some pretty hard choices in the budget throughout. We're nicking the contribution system. We're putting some pressure on the human services departments, and so this is my effort to try to find a little more way to economize, but I think I've got to withdraw the amendment this time, Mr. Chair, and proceed with other topics.
Representative Abler withdraws his amendment. Now we have the Vandeveer amendment back. Representative Vandeveer moves the A-47 amendment, and there should be a couple of typed amendments to the amendment that have been distributed. Representative Vandeveer, why don't you tell us about both of them, and they can be incorporated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first one simply changes some language as far as how electronic or counties are approved for electronic filings. That begins page 2 and page 6. It references those. It makes it more to the liking of the counties. The second one deletes a section that provides for the opportunity to negotiate payment for some services from the county. And that's what the amendment does, or the amendment to the amendment does, so if I can incorporate that, I'd like to.
Okay, well, Representative Andrew, you can certainly incorporate it into your amendment, and I think we'll just deem that these are incorporated, but I'm wondering, Representative Vandeveer, now that they are incorporated, can you just tell us some more about the amendment? It's a rather long amendment, and I think everyone would benefit from some more knowledge of what the amendment is.
Certainly. What the amendment does is reinstates the electronic real estate recording in Minnesota. It allows the pilot counties that have been doing this to start up again. The electronic filing was stopped due to the last year's legislative session not passing a number of bills, including the omnibus state government bill. And so what this does is reinstates that. It reconstructs the task force to continue developing additional filings, and that's pretty much it. It would give the counties that have been involved in the process the ability to continue doing filings, something that they want, the pilot counties. So that's what the amendment does.
And Representative Vandeveer, does this have a amendment?
Mr. Chair, it has no fee in it. It does have, and I don't believe it has a financial impact. I think that the bill in front of you, the 1481, has money appropriated to this task force in it, so it doesn't change that.
Excuse me, Mr. Marks has a comment.
Mr. Chair, members, this $25,000 a year is already counted within the state government finance target. I think it would be appropriate here to give the staff direction to rewrite this, and if this is going in this bill, we should build it into the legislature's appropriation because it's part of the LCC, rather than have it as a separate line, separate appropriation the way it's structured in this amendment. So it would just be we build it in and change, fix all the numbers in the bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, we are tracking this bill. We in our targets. We just don't have the language in because we were working on trying to get people to agree. Representative Hilty and I are okay with this language. It's just that the money is built into the bill without specifically having the line item in there.
Representative McNamara, then Ruffavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if my question maybe is for the author of the amendment. Representative Vandeveer, are the county auditors and recorders okay with this?
Representative Vandeveer.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, we're not certain. We've been working on it, and we continue to work on it, and we haven't got a 100% agreement. I think they're okay with putting this in here for now this way, and they could comment on it if they'd like. Up to the chair.
Representative Ripavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, along those lines, the Representative McNamara, I recall this bill kind of broke down, if I'm not mistaken, in Commerce Committee or a little bit. There was some argument over whether it was supported by county recorders and auditors, if this is the bill that either you or I think you were the author, Representative Vandeveer. And then I got a phone call today from my county recorder up in St. Louis County to continue to oppose your bill. I think it was your bill on electronic recording, because there were some concerns about rural Minnesota, particularly losing, you know, money and fees and that, and I don't know, losing control. So if there still is not any kind of an agreement between the county auditors and recorders, and is this the involve the Secretary of State still, Mr.
Representative Vandeveer? Yeah, it does, but it doesn't take any.
Well, and I think that was the concern, that all of a sudden the Secretary of State's office was getting in the recorder, county recorder business. So I don't really know why we're putting in this bill when.
Mr. Chairman, I would be nothing but excited and happy to not have this in my bill. But I believe the recorders would like to have it in the bill so we have it dealt with, because in the Senate, I believe the standalone bill is they're ready to pull the feeding tube on it, and I think everybody wants this to have a recreation next year and wants to do electronic filing. I do have, I believe, someone from the counties and the chair of the Recorders Association here, who just happens to be my county recorder. So I would let you know, first of all, that if they are not okay with this, I will oppose the amendment. But Janine, do you want to come forward and just give a brief thought on this?
Welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Could you give us your name for the record and your testimony?
I'm Janine Barker, and I am the president of the Recorders Association. And the testimony on this amendment would be that we thought we had we have been working very diligently on coming up with some wording that we agree on with the Secretary of State, and we basically thought we had an agreement this afternoon, but then when I arrived, I found out that that wasn't binding. So I am not opposing this amendment, because I hope that we can continue to compromise and get something workable. It is very important that the counties who are able to do e-recording get back to e-recording.
Thank you. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, was this dealt with in another committee and then not passed out? Was this heard in the Commerce Committee?
Mr. Representative Seifert.
Chair, Representative Solberg, this is the version, I believe, or quasi-version of what passed out of our committee, Two Ways and Means, here about a week ago. And I'm trying to remember if you were here, that was when the Staubach group was up and you guys were caucusing, but I basically told everybody, figure this out and get on the same page. This is about one of the last vehicles moving through that it can go in terms of an omnibus bill. So I think that was why the recorder said they're okay putting it in here. But now now I'm going to be running the show in terms of this, and maybe we're just going to have to fix this for all the parties. I don't know. But if people don't want to put it in, It's up to the committee on what they want to do.
Representative Vanderveer, let me ask you, we've had a lot of bills transferred to Ways and Means lately. Do you have a separate bill for this that has been referred to Ways and Means?
Mr. Chair, I believe that we do, but I would still... Well, it's up to the committee, actually. I could withdraw the amendment.
Well, it just does seem like there's a lot of questions, and if we do have the bill in our possession already, we will be certainly acting upon it in the near future.
Well, we could, although having it, as Representative Seifert said, that may be the end of it because the companion isn't moving in the Senate. So,
Mr. Chair?
Representative Sorberg.
If I recall the rules of the House, if we proceed with this in a separate group, and it does pass the House, and it, at some future time, if we get the agreements at that particular time, it can also be included in a later date.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Vanderveer.
I think if there's an interest in keeping the electronic filing alive, that one, the objections appear to me to be largely political at their source. But the second thing that I would say is that if there is an interest in continuing what we've invested in, it would be best if something went in the state government finance bill. But
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Seifert and Hilty.
I just had someone tell me that this is going to show up in Senator Cascaden's bill tomorrow, apparently, so which is the companion to my omnibus bill.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention that Representative Seifert did point out that we were in agreement about this amendment, and that was based on our understanding that, we've heard a lot about this bill, and it clearly does need more work, but I think we're in agreement that there's probably a light at the end of the tunnel here, and that if we do continue the bill, the differences that can be worked out.
Well, Representative Vanderveer, is this, or Representative Seifert, you say that this is also moving with the Senate. Is this identical language to the Senate? Do you know?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is this is the standalone bill is not moving in the Senate. I think they're jumping onto the vehicle of the omnibus bill, but it'll be in their omnibus bill. So, if anybody thinks I'm going to give up something in my bill to the Senate to help with this, I mean, I want to get this solved for the recorders and the secretary and everybody, but it's up to the committee on what they want to do. It's
Well, members, I'm open to further discussion. Mr. March, did you have something you needed to tell us on the fiscal issues?
Mr. Chair, what I had said earlier wasn't quite accurate. It's been pointed out to me that this bill actually makes an appropriation in 2006, 2007, and 2008, the first year of the next biennium. There would be a couple ways to handle it. One is to leave the language in like this, which would have a separate appropriation language in a different article. The other way would be that we appropriate the $25,000 in 2006 and in 2007 as part of the Article 1 appropriations, and we can build in tails for 2008 and then zero for 2009. That wouldn't actually make the 2008 appropriation the first year of the next biennium or beyond the next biennium, actually. But it would be consistent with the way we do other things, or we can leave this section in the way it is.
Representative Sorberg.
I have a little difficulty appropriating into the next legislature after we're probably all gone.
Representative Vanderveer.
Let's take the 6-7 option, I think, that we discussed, Mr. Marks. If that's all right.
Mr. Chair and members, then it would be, as we discussed, we'd add $25,000 to the legislature's appropriation in 2006 and in 2007. In the tails tracking, we would add $25,000 for 08 and zero for 09.
All right. Representative Vanderveer, is that all right with you? Do you want to incorporate that into your understanding of this?
I do, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Seifert.
My tails are, I think, out of the 10 omnibus bills, myself and Representative Osmond are the only ones that are under in tails, and I'm $4 million under in tails, so I guess that would work.
All right.
Mr. Chairman here.
Representative Smith, so far, Representative Smith.
I was just going to say you're not the only one, sir.
All right. Okay. Members, other discussion to the A47 amendment? Hearing no further discussion, I'm going to call the question on the A47 amendment. All in favor of the A47 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments? Representative Paymark.
Mr. Chair, I have an oral amendment, if that's okay.
Representative Paymark, state your oral amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, I would like to delete Article 4 from the bill.
And what page is that on, Representative Paymark?
It starts on page 59.
Okay, Representative Paymar moves to delete Article 4 dealing with the mandates.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Paymar.
Just briefly want to say that I think that while I think that the bill that got included in the omnibus bill was well-meaning, I think that there's some financial unintended consequences that will...
Okay, do you want to...
It would be very problematic. Let me just say what this is. This is basically an opt-out provision that will allow local units of government through a fairly convoluted process, actually, opt out of state mandates. But I want the committee, if you're not familiar with this bill, to understand that some of the possible mandates that a local unit of government could opt out, this could be a city, a county, or a school district, could be our child protection laws, OSHA regulations, PELRA, the Human Rights Act, municipal water quality regulations, feedlots, open enrollment, grad standards, daycare standards, road standards, essential employees, pay equity, on and on and on. So unless... this bill and this article designated specific mandates that cause economic hardship to local units of government, I don't think we should have such a broad state opt-out provision in law. Furthermore, Mr. Chair and members, I think this will bring lawsuits to local units of government as well as to the state. And if you look at subdivision 3 of the article, it also has this other very difficult process where the legislature then gets involved and adopts rules relative to the opt-out proposals, which is going to cause additional time and expense for the legislature that I think is unnecessary. So while it might have been a well-meaning provision by Representative Olson, I would hope that the Ways and Means Committee would decide that this would have financial unintended consequences and that we vote to delete this article from the bill.
Discussion to the Paymar oral amendment. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymar, I share some of the concerns that you have. My committee voted this bill out as a standalone after a lot of work. This is the last version. I know this. You probably saw the initial version. And I don't want to disappoint Representative Olson, but if you read on pages 62 and 63, Representative Solberg and Kahn pointed this out in my committee, that the legislature does nothing with this. There is no opting out. They can pass resolutions, and I mean, I hate to say it, they can do this now. I mean, they can pass resolutions saying we don't like this mandate. If so many of these groups on page 63 pass it, the legislature still has to allow opt-out. So I thought the language was after we kind of finished with it, you know, we still have to approve anything, is my understanding. So it's not as egregious as maybe when the committee that, I don't know what committee you reviewed it in, it might have been one of the first ones. But Representative Solberg, you remember this bill last week too, and I thought it was pretty innocent by the time we were done, because the legislature ultimately has control on this. We do not allow a singular unit of government to just thumb their nose at whatever they want.
Well, Mr.
Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not necessarily defending this, but it has changed considerably, I think, when we got it into the committee, and It's just kind of a petition to the legislature is what it ended up to be, to take a look at a bill. That's a problem.
Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to clarify this, too. I sat through, I've heard this bill for a long time. I think I could give you the whole argument for it. I think it's just a feedback mechanism, and if enough entities feed back to us, we have to put a bill in and vote on it someday. Any relief from any mandate has to be done legislatively, and we have to have a bill and has to pass both sides and be signed by the governor, which we could do now. So it's really nothing.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Paymar.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, Seifert, why put this into statute if it's just a matter of local units of government petitioning the state and saying they don't like certain mandates? I've heard the bill before. It does appear like it's more watered down than I originally heard it, but it still seems to say that if you had a minimum of six counties or two cities of the first class, if Minneapolis and St. Paul decided that they didn't like their road standards, they could petition the legislature, and if we got enough... why put this into statute if it's...
Mr. Representative Seifert. Representative Paymar, it's probably a better question for Representative Olson. Our committee tried to work with all the bills that came before my committee that passed generally unanimously or had broad bipartisan support. We allowed to go in the bill. Representative Olson, I thought, made a fairly good case after amending it down immensely that... I asked Representative Kahn and Solberg that morning. They said that, it's not a lot. I think we'd all have problems if we could just unilaterally allow people to opt out anything they wanted. But I think the committee felt that Representative Olson, we got to give him something once in a while.
Representative Abrams.
I was just asking for this little piece, and I just thought we didn't have any opposition in my committee after we were done with it, so I just thought we'd give him this little piece.
Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Seifert members, I think that Representative Paymar makes an excellent point, particularly in the language on page 63, lines 4 through 9, in which we are putting in statute a requirement that the legislature adopt rules governing how we process bills. And that means that if this isn't statute and somebody doesn't like the rules or how it's prioritized or are there seven or are there, the counties below that, that somebody can go to court and have the court order the legislature to adopt the rules because it's a matter of statute. So, I'll give Representative Olson an A for persistence, but I'm not going to give him a grade as to the impact of paragraph B. I'm just going to show my disapproval by voting for the Paymar Amendment.
Mr. Representative Solberg.
And I would probably agree that's something that we probably goofed up in the committee as we were looking at that. So another way to be able to solve that problem is to change that must to a may.
I can live with that, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Mr. Chair, just let me, if members want on Friday morning when this bill is up, if this section goes out, Representative Olson has promised at least a two-hour floor discussion on this section, and I will work on conference on this issue, so I'll just assure members that we'll try to fix any problems there may be.
Okay, well, first of all, let me say, is Representative Olson in the room? If he is, I certainly would want him to come down. All right, Representative Oz, let's see, Representative Solberg, Well, I think we should deal with the Paymar Amendment first, and I guess that we can then deal with whether we should strike the must and change it to may. Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, I believe that what we're talking about here is that the direction that the House and Senate would adopt their rules on how they would deal with up to seven mandates. I don't think it's actually... I know that the language doesn't really kind of reflect that, but as I recall, that's really what he's talking about, not that each mandate would have to have a rule established for it, but it's how the House and Senate would deal with mandates. That's not the case?
I don't think it is.
Representative Abrams?
Well, Chairman, my good friend Representative Osmond, must adopt rules, House rules and Senate rules, that up to seven mandates upon which the minimum number of local units of government are signatories to are given a priority status and presented to the House and the Senate for consideration and action by that body. So if you are a Ramsey County District Court where this thing will probably be venued, and the House adopted a rule saying that, well, first you have to adopt a rule under this language, but secondly, adopted a rule saying that these rules shall be, or these seven mandates shall be sent to the
committee.
Government Operations Committee, and then was silent, somebody could sue Representative Osmond and say this wasn't given a priority status, and action by a committee is not action by the body, and therefore I, as a taxpayer, demand that the court enforce this law and require the House and the Senate to adopt rules saying that A, it gets a priority, and B, it gets a vote up or down on the House floor and the Senate floor. That's what that language could be interpreted as saying, Representative Osmond.
And Mr. Chair, I like the Solberg approach on that one, and that way we've kind of, as I said, this is an issue. I've been visited by Representative Olson on this. I will be sure to send him to all of your offices for those of you who want to take this out, and certainly you can debate him on the floor at length on Friday morning when if this comes out. I would suggest we leave it in and adopt the Solberg Amendment and move on.
Okay, Representative Seifert, so you are speaking against the Paymar oral amendment, but then saying that if it is defeated, you would want to change the must to may on page 63, line 4.
Sure.
Representative Osmond, did you have another point?
Nope.
Okay, other discussion to the Paymar oral amendment?
It was blank.
See no discussion. All in favor of the Paymar oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
I'll ask for a division on that. I don't want Representative Olson in my office either. No, just kidding. All in favor of the Paymar Amendment, raise your hand. There were so many of us, it's hard to make sure we got an accurate count. I want to make sure we do. Okay. All opposed, raise your hands. Okay, there being 12 ayes and 18 nays, the Paymar Amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Solberg,
may I move on page 63, line 4, changing the must to a may.
Okay, Representative Solberg moves page 63, line 4, change the must to a may. Discussion.
And Mr. Chair, I don't know as if but there needs to be some additional mays in here, too. I would like to have my good friend Representative Abrams look on page, the same page on line 26.
Must be.
I guess that. Is that okay, that must there? That one's okay, Council tells me so. I think this will help solve some of the problems.
All right. Discussion to the Solberg oral amendment.
Well, wait a second. There's also page 62, line 33. There's a must consider there, too. That's good of me there.
So, Representative Solberg, you'd also like on page 62, line 33, change the must to may.
I think so, yeah. Yep.
All right. Discussion, Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I never thought I would say this, but it's seeing legislation like this that makes me rethink my support for unicameral.
We told you so.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, the discussion in recent moments, you know, one time I chaired the Education Committee, and you may have learned now why I set up a subcommittee. I had a certain member that we were able to refer bills to for. Representative Rukavina.
Being a, you know, that I hold my relationship with Representative Olson dear to my heart, I want to ask Representative Abrams, what's so bad about, you know how I feel about the mandate sometimes that we pass. I mean, let's take, you know, the meth bill now where we're going to have, I think, a lot of county costs, and we pass it on to the county and, you know, go home and pound our chest about how good we are at solving crime, and but pass the problem on to the taxpayers below us. What's wrong with having to have some bills that we actually have to hear and defend why we didn't fund them, but forced a lower unit of government below us to implement them?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Rukavina, it kind of gets back to the old idea that once an issue is decided, it ought to be decided. Things like pay equity and human rights and the environment, you know, some of the concerns that Representative Tamar brought forth are important. And, you know, when you see that any six counties could trigger a second vote on pay equity or a third vote on pay equity or any one of the other things enumerated by Representative Paymar, even though I may be on the other side, I think that once an issue has been decided, sometimes there ought to be finality. And Representative Rukavina, I know that you are a very conscientious state representative. I hear it from your people all the time, people who you represent, and that you do listen to your county commissioners. Well, some of the county commissioners are
from Colton North, Mr. Chair.
But you also listen to your school boards. You listen to your city councils, Representative Rukavina. You certainly listen to your township officials. And they do have access to you, and if enough of those folks are talking to enough of us folks, we will act, Representative Rukavina. We will act. But I don't like the idea that willy-nilly, maybe it's not willy-nilly, but, you know, six counties or 25 home rule charter cities all of a sudden trigger almost a reconsideration of action that the legislature did. You know, I understand your frustrations, Representative Rukavina, on certain bills that we passed, but sometimes I've lost bills, and I'm kind of glad that the debate's over and you move on to another issue.
Well, I'm not going to belabor it, but I just think that, you know, sometimes we actually, and I understand what Representative Olson is trying to say. He's trying to say, I think, that, hey, you put you know, some financial pressures on the people below us, so whether it's in a township, city, or county level, and we're the ones that pass the bill, that we should pay the bill. And that often doesn't happen around here, so I'm not going to discuss it any further, but you know, I just had to be the defender of my fellow libertarian type person.
Okay, other discussion to the Solberg Oral Amendment. Representative Osman.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would also, I'd speak against the amendment because I believe it has enough precautions within the proposal to keep frivolous issues from coming forward. I mean, communities that want to file a complaint have to do it in identical fashion. They also have to file dollars in order to, they got to put some money behind their commitments as they're bringing this to the auditor's attention. This is not something they'll be doing frivolously or very often. But when enough of them actually meet this threshold, I think that the legislature should at least have adopted some rules so that those issues could come before the legislature. And seven issues a year doesn't seem to me to be an unreasonable request. And that spending some time in trying to figure out how to make that happen, I think, is deserving of further deliberation on it, and I would like to see it stay as a must.
May, Representative Solberg.
Well, let me defend my May, and I think Representative Abrams has done the best job of defending it. But in addition, I would think that if someone brought this type of action to the legislature, there would be enough pressure in the legislature to deal with the issue, whether we do deal with it in a bill form or if we... we have to adopt rules that give it a priority status and that the House has to vote on it. is going probably a little bit farther than I would like to go at present time.
Other discussion? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the Solberg oral amendment changing the two musts to mays, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Oh.
Division. All in favor of the Solberg oral amendment, raise your hand.
Someone get notes for Marco from the next page.
Okay. Too late. Too late. All opposed.
These voices on the left.
There have been 20 ayes and 9 nays. The Solberg Amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Representative Kelleher.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure it's going to result in an amendment or not, but I'll start out with something that I think needs to be discussed in the bill that appeared in committee, and I think there's probably some misunderstanding about this section. So I actually, I think it's a section that you put into this bill, and it is Article 5, begins on page 63, and deals with Minneapolis teacher pensions. Mr. Chair, this is certainly an issue that you and I have discussed in the past in this committee, and I know that it's not always the most interesting topic to discuss, but I'm very concerned about the language in the bill because there's actually a very good bill that's going to be heard in the Pension Commission tomorrow that probably gets us a long way to the solution. I believe it's Representative Smith's bill, 1615, and I'm concerned about this language because if the goal of dealing with the Minneapolis teachers' pension issue, which for newer members is not really just about the Minneapolis teachers, it's really about teachers who live all around the state who may have taught at one time in the Minneapolis system, but they live in just about every district in the whole state. If the goal is to find and solve the problem, this certainly does not do it. This issue is an issue that is really a funding issue, and I think, Chairman Knobloch, you know that. I want to thank Representative Seifert. I know that he could have been tempted to raid the aid that comes to the city of Minneapolis and others in terms of pensions, and I want to thank him for that today. So my beef is not with him, but it certainly is a concern over this language, and I think we should have a discussion about it.
Okay, well, Representative Kelleher, I don't know if you've talked to Representative Kahn or Representative Mullery, who I have worked with on this over the last few days. We did have some rather extensive discussion on this in the State Government Finance Committee yesterday. I did offer three amendments that changed the language from what was originally in the bill. Those amendments were to A, remove the limit on administrative costs, B, change the post-retirement payment to be the same as that being given to TRA instead of what was previously in, and C, to remove the provision that said that the members of the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund would have their benefits charged by a certain amount equal to the difference between the State Board of Investment return and the Minneapolis Teachers Fund return if the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund did not give their assets to the State Board of Investment for Management. It was always my intention to just try to give them the incentive to give it to the State Board for Management because the State Board has been having a better record. But in discussions with Ms. Kilberg, with Representative Mullery, with Representative Kahn, we removed that language. I've been told in the testimony with state government yesterday that Ms. Kilberg was going to talk to the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund Board and urge them to move their assets to the State Board of Investment. And in testimony yesterday, and I guess Ms. Kilberg is here, but she said she did not oppose the language with the amendments that were adopted in state government finance. So that is where we are with it as of right now, Representative Kelleher.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think your discussions with Representative Kahn, Representative Mullery, although improved your original language, gets to that issue of authority to negotiate an issue. And I really think that there's a process here around the Pension Commission to look at these issues, and although I don't always agree with the Pension Commission, and I don't think maybe each of us have had that experience, that that is the proper place for substantial legislation like this to move through. And certainly with the bill being heard tomorrow, Representative Smith's bill being heard tomorrow, and really creating a mechanism that actually I think does a couple of these things, but then also goes far beyond that to provide the framework for solving the funding mechanism, I feel uncomfortable with this in here. And I think that if I'm not, you know, what I'm taking this secondhand because I didn't get to hear the committee testimony, but that is that Ms. Kilberg said she would be taking this to her board, but she did not have the authority to agree to this language as of yesterday and may not have even really been given the opportunity to completely review the language by a member who offered it to her. Maybe I shouldn't say offer, but told her it was happening. So I have a concern about this. I think that this is not the best way to do this. I know you have a legitimate and real want to solve the problem. I do too, Representative Knobloch. I think you know that. We had a big argument a couple years ago where you kept saying, where's your solution, Representative Kelleher? And I have a solution. It's Representative Smith's bill. I like it. I think it actually gets us a long way there, and I wish we would be sticking with that instead of this. And so that is my concern today. I think there's a couple other members who would like to make some comments.
Okay, let me just say something else, and then I'll turn to some other members. I guess, firstly, this bill is also up with the Pension Commission tomorrow for discussion. At least there's going to be a hearing on it. There's going to be a hearing on Representative Smith's bill. There are, I think, some concerns some members might have about Representative Smith's bill. I've never represented that the language in here solves the whole problem, but I'm told by Larry Martin that instead of having a default date of maybe 6 to 7 years, this moves us out to having a default date of now maybe 20 years. And I think that it's worth doing to get it on the discussion and get it on the table so that we try to at least push the default date out on this. I guess otherwise I would say, you know, this was approved by the Pension Commission last year, this language. And I think that certainly I'm happy to have them hear it again, but we have the bill moving. Something needs to happen in this area, and so that's why I'm proposing that we deal with it again. Representative Kelleher.
Well, Representative Knobloch, again, you know, possibly an A for effort, but I don't think it's the right solution in the sense that one of the things that by pushing the date out, what you get is that you do not stabilize the system. And, you know, it's one of those situations where it's just not a pleasant experience to deal with people who are currently teaching or we're trying to attract into the district to teach who look at this particular problem and potentially make other choices based on this date or pushing it out, because it is not solving the stability problem, it is not solving the underlying funding problem, and I think that we should be working together to get the right mix here between solving the funding problem, which I believe Representative Smith does in his bill, and I think some of your ideas probably can even work together with that bill, but not doing it in this bill today.
Well, Representative Kelleher, you know, there are no easy solutions to the long-term problems here other than putting in a significant amount of money in one way or another, and that is what Representative Smith's bill, as I understand it, does. But I'm not speaking against Representative Smith's bill. I'm merely saying this language at least gets us a lot more time than we have right now, and with that, I guess I would hope that the committee would keep it in. But I see Representative Sikora had her hand raised, and Representative Larson. Let me go to Representative Sikora first.
Representative Knobloch, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Smith, I was just wondering if you could just give us kind of the basic outline of the differences between the two issues we're discussing, because I'm not familiar. I am familiar with your bill. I am not familiar with Representative Smith's. Now, if you don't want to take the time to do that, that's fine, I guess, but
sure.
I don't see how we can discuss it here unless we really know what the two issues are or what the different sides of the issue are, the two bills.
Okay. Briefly, I guess I would just say the two main items that cause the extension of the default date in the bill I have that is in this bill are A, the fact that the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund would now be investing their assets with the State Board of Investment, and the additional money the state puts in each year would be invested with the State Board of Investment, who have historically had a higher return, and B, the post-retirement adjustment that the current retirees and beneficiaries of the Minneapolis Teachers Board get is significantly better than that of TRA, and going to the TRA plan would result in thus more money when the stock market performs well, staying in the Minneapolis Teachers plan to bolster it up rather than being paid out to beneficiaries. There are other adjustments, but those are the two main things that contribute to a longer time before there's a default. And I guess, you know, Representative Smith, I know you weren't probably prepared to talk about your bill now, but if you want to, please feel free to.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sikora, the only thing I'm going to add to the debate is, in listening to Representative Kelleher of the Pension Commission, is the bipartisan body set up to filter these issues and then refer them to the Senate and the House. However, while the issue is before the Commission tomorrow, I do not hold the gavel for this session. And it's my understanding from the chair of the Pension Commission where it's up for discussion only. I'm not sure that there will be any vote tomorrow or at all this session on the issue in the Pension Commission. So, frankly, if the issue is going to move, I suspect this is one route, one method. And it's up to this committee whether you want to move this bill, move this section of the bill along.
Representative Sikora.
So if I understand it correctly, this may be the only fix available for this session.
Representative Seifert, the author, and then Representative Larson.
Mr. Chair, and I appreciate Representative Kelleher's questions and concerns on this. As members know, we have a $37 million general fund subsidy to the first class teacher pension funds. I gave my word when my target was savaged on the floor. The easy thing for my committee to do would have taken $14 million out of that $37 million, and I wouldn't be offending all the groups across the board because I had nothing to work with for money. But I said I would work with people, and I think my committee worked pretty well given the money or lack thereof that we had. But what I would say is that I told Representative Knobloch that in his original language, if he could please work with Representative Muller and Kahn, who are the two Minneapolis folks on my committee, to come up with the language and take out some of the things that they felt was egregious so we could pass the bill with their support. And I didn't want to have a situation where we had two members of our committee who have a lot of input in this bill. Policy, we took Representative Muller's Veterans Initiative at full funding. I didn't want to have a poisonous item in the bill that they objected to. They worked with Representative Knobloch and Ms. Kilberg to try to come up with things, and they deleted out a bunch of the sections. And as this moves forward, I just think because we have the subsidy issue moving along, that the modest reform that we have in this is good. And I had a retired Minneapolis teacher email me this morning saying, thank you for doing some modest reform that is not nasty or outrageous, because she's afraid that in 5 to 7 years it will be a bankrupt fund, which it will be if we do nothing. And this at least gives us 20 years of life, and I took Representative Kahn and Muller at their word that they were okay with the revised version, and Representative Solberg and Hilty were in the room, and I thought we worked this out pretty well, that the poisonous portions were taken out that they really felt were egregious. So I will work with you, Representative Kelleher. I told Representative Kahn and Muller I would talk with them. If anything is done in conference, that I would visit with them before we just mark up something, because I do feel that year after year we say something needs to be done and it just gets shoved off, and either pensions has other things going on or people don't want to do something. And I feel I have these teachers live in my district too. I've got some up in Cottonwood that said try to save this at least while we're alive, and so I said, hey, I can try to help out here. But I didn't want to do anything that upset my committee members, and I thought we came up with a good product. So I think for now we could. All the parties seem to be okay with this so far, and that's what I would put on the record. For $37 million, we have to keep our word on that, but we also have to try to get a little bit of reform to keep this a solvent fund for everybody involved.
Representative Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Seifert. Several points. First of all, I have concerns that we would characterize this as a solution at all. And quite frankly, I think one of the worst things that we can do is send a message to retirees that we're somehow solving the problem when we're really just pushing the problem off into the future. And to the extent that we are solving it, we're solving it on their backs. I think that, quite frankly, from a process standpoint, Representative Knobloch, the Pension Commission, even though this may have been through the Pension Commission last year, we're a different legislature, it's a different commission, and I think that I'd feel more comfortable if they had the opportunity to consider a fix, and maybe this is what they end up with, but at the end of the day, I think it's more important that we follow a process that we have in place. And so I think that we need to be real careful in moving forward on this. Mr. Chair, I would move to delete Article 5 and would just suggest that we should allow Representative Smith's bill to be heard, and we should allow that process to move forward and allow more conversation to occur. As I understand it, while I can appreciate the fact that Representative Kahn and Representative Mullery are interested in the issue and have a stake in this, my constituents, I've heard from a lot of constituents who are Minneapolis retired teachers, they have a stake in it too. And I'd feel more comfortable hearing a full report from the Pension Commission than I feel hearing that two or three members cut a deal on how to solve a problem, when in fact many of us believe that this isn't solved at all. So, members, I would renew that motion to delete Article 5 and would ask for your support.
Okay, well, Representative Larson, I do want to put, just a second, Representative, I do want to say I have never said that this is a solution. I don't want people to think that this solves all of our problems. However, it does push out the default date to, I am told, about 20 years from now. And Representative Larson, you also heard Representative Smith that all we have right now that I know of is an informational hearing in the Pension Commission tomorrow. I don't know that anything else is going to happen on this otherwise. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, this is extremely important. Mr. Shepard told me that if members are going by the bill summary, the changes that were agreed to by Representative Kahn, Mullery, and yourself are not in the summary. It's the original issue. It's not the, so the bill and the summary are different. So the moderate version is in the bill, but not in the summary. Just so members know that the changes that were made in the agreement are in the bill, but not they were not updated in the summary. Just so people know that.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with others that not going through the Pension Commission for something major like the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund is highly irregular, and I don't think it's a good precedent at all. I have two questions, but I also have a lot of constituents because my district borders Minneapolis who are Minneapolis teachers, and so year after year we have this problem, and year after year nothing gets done, and I don't think that's satisfactory either. My two questions, one for Representative Seifert. You mentioned Representative Kahn and Representative Mullery quite often that they got out some of the worst stuff, but did they end up supporting this is my first question.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greiling, it's my understanding they said that they could live with it. I don't believe they voted against the bill. I'm hesitant to say that they are in 100% agreement with the issue. I mean, Representative Hilty, correct me if I'm wrong. I think they were okay with the bill when it passed. They liked the compromise as opposed to the original language and made it sound, because the appropriation is carried in this bill. I mean, it's easy for us to take all the reforms and throw them out the window and keep putting the subsidy forward. This ties the subsidy and the reform, even if it's a tiny tweak, it's not a solution, Representative Larson, but it at least keeps the fund solvent for at least another sort of a generation. If you want the fund to go bankrupt in 5 to 7 years and we want to keep skirting it off to other committees, okay. But when we get to conference, it's going to be tough for my members to say, well, we're just going to have 3 votes to adopt this money without doing any sort of even a tiny bit of reform. And I think Representative Mullery and Representative Kahn understood that. I think they were okay in removing the other language. But if somebody wants to go try to find them, I think that's okay. But they for what I could tell, they didn't vote against the bill with this in it.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you had another question. Representative Greiling. Excuse me, Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My other question, of course, none of us know at this point if there's going to be a pension bill this year or what they will do with this tomorrow, and that's, you know, part of the dilemma. But my question to Representative Seifert is, if somehow this did end up being enacted, either through the Pension Commission or through this bill, once it had embarked upon this path, how likely is it or how possible would it be to transfer over the path to Representative Smith's bill? And if you want to defer that to Representative Smith, that's fine, too.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, I did talk with Representative Smith a little this morning that I was planning on consulting with him quite a bit as we move toward conference. And if this is something they plan on taking up, in the if there is a pension bill, I mean, we could move the $37 million to the path. We could say, well, if we're not dealing with pensions here, let's take the $37 million and put it in the Pension Commission, too. I don't know that anybody's comfortable with that, particularly since I've given my word that I'm going to protect it and move it forward. Now everybody seems to love it, but you know, I think that Representative Smith is planning on having a pension bill and conferring the issue. It's just that I hope in some venue or another this is dealt with. If he deals with a pension bill, I think that's great, and I can just drop it. But my comfort level as the sand runs onto the hourglass on this issue before we hit default, that's not that far down the line. 20 years from now, you know, someone's going to have to deal with it. Representative Conn will probably be here. I won't.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That, you answered a different question than the one I asked. You answered what happens in, during the course of this legislative session if we have them both going along, and you could drop this one if the Pension Commission did something and we had a pension bill. But what I'm talking about is, what if yours actually passed, and then a later legislature wanted to do the, sounds like, the Superior Smith plan. How, what would be the likelihood of it being at all possible to change over?
But, Mr. Chair, my understanding is these provisions could be repealed.
Chair, yeah, Representative Greiling, I don't think that this in any way excludes the enactment of the other plan. Okay, I've got Representative Carlson, Sikora, Krenke, Kelleher, and Earhart. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to comment a bit about the purpose of the role of the Pension Commission. You know, and there was a time in the legislature here, and I hope we're still there, where virtually any legislation dealing with pensions had to go through the Pension Commission and have their blessing. That was the whole purpose of having that commission. And the point I want to make is that I've had many bills through the years before the Pension Commission. And when you reference, Mr. Chairman, tomorrow night's being an informational hearing, the tradition of the commission with virtually every bill that I've ever had there is just that. There's an informational hearing. The author comes in, presents the bill, and they are all laid over and then included, if the Pension Commission agrees, in the omnibus pension bill. So I assume, in fact, I have been watching the Pension Commission in terms of hearings, and I think tomorrow night may be only the first or second hearing that they've had. They're really just getting started, and maybe Representative Smith can comment about that. But I suspect tomorrow night is the first step in a process that will ultimately lead to whatever recommendations they make for an omnibus bill that comes forward. So I would hope members would respect the role of the Pension Commission, and you know, the legislature's not done until it's over, and they should have an opportunity to look at this proposal, the proposal that Representative Smith has, make a determination and make a recommendation to the Government Ops Committee, and then go through the process that we normally do with pensions.
Representative Sikora.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I will confess I'm not well-versed on pension issues, but I have spent quite a bit of time this year talking with the lobbyists to fix this issue for the Minneapolis teachers. So I have a lot of concerned constituents that have located in my district. And it seems to me the Pensions Commission has known this is a problem. I've been hearing about this for at least 6 years, and probably before that when it wasn't up on my radar screen. I'm trying to understand if the Pension Commission is going to fix it. It seems to me that it's time to fish or cut bait. We need to not go on forever watching this thing go down in a death spiral. So why wouldn't we do something? It can always come out in conference committee if the pensions committee comes up with a great deal. I don't understand why we wouldn't do something that people have agreed would probably work. At least help it for a while.
Representative Krenke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is absolutely the most appropriate place for this language because, first and foremost, there's a $31 million appropriation, I believe, to the Minneapolis Teachers Fund in this bill. As others have stated, the Pension Commission really is more of a process. It's acts as a clearinghouse, acts as a commission which makes recommendations. All of the Pension Commission legislation still is needs to go through the government operations committees in both the House and the Senate. If it has fiscal issues, those need to go to the State Government Finance Committee in both the Senate and the House. So, members, this has already followed that track. So to piggyback on what Representative Sikora said, people have been trying to skirt this issue and pretend it's not there for years. I've spent 6 years on the Pension Commission. I think every year I have brought this issue forward, or someone has brought this issue forward. Members, if you want to just put your head in the sand and ignore what's going on with the Minneapolis Teachers Fund, soon there will be people who won't receive a pension check who are retired Minneapolis teachers. So you can talk about something that's going to get heard in the Pension Commission, or you can vote against the Larson Amendment and at least make a step toward trying to resolve the issue. So if you want to remove the language, then, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd follow up with removing the $31 million.
Yeah. Representative Kelleher.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I don't think that my motives here today, and I do feel like you're questioning my motives, Representative Krenke, is to skirt the issue. That is what you're doing by saying what you just said. It's a scare tactic to retirees that Representative Larson's amendment is somehow going to make the problem worse than it is. Frankly, Representative Knobloch's amendment makes it worse by extending the date out and taking pressure off of these bodies to do their work, which is to try to find a solution. And frankly, there is a solution that may be workable, which is Representative Smith's bill. There needs to be, most likely, the authority to issue pension bonds for the school district of Minneapolis. And that is one of the funding options that would work to do the infusion of cash. I've read the memos. I've read everything that's available to me about this issue. And I just think for us to sit here today and say that Representative Larson's amendment is about us putting our head in the sand is really disingenuous tonight. I mean, this is about trying to figure out a solution that would actually work and actually solve the problem. And Representative Seifert, I believe I said already, I thanked you for not attacking those funds. I am not trying to get into that fight tonight about where we sit today, but I want to move this issue forward. And I think that Representative Carlson clarified pretty well what the process is in the Pension Commission towards moving forward. Will the whole Bill 1615 pass this year? I'm not sure if it will, but my guess is there's building support around figuring out how to move this issue forward and not just extend it out for 20 more years. I just don't think that to say that somehow the Larson Amendment is making the problem worse is really like putting your head in the sand, because frankly, this does nothing for the funding solution to this problem, does nothing to address the shared responsibility, state, city, school district, but the Smith bill, frankly, does begin to do that. And you know, I will not sit here and let us be portrayed as trying to hurt the fund by looking at the real funding solution.
Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I think about this, if we figure that we're going to have the teachers' pension plan fail in about 20 years, along with Social Security failing about that time and Medicaid failing about 20 years out. I think if I was a teacher, I'd be very nervous.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I'm not a pension person, and I venture forth with great trepidation here. Representative Seifert, the only thing I want to get involved here is on page 64. My city's involved. Our Teachers Retirement Fund Association is involved here a little bit. And so can you just tell me, I just want to make sure I'm reading this correctly, in this language, what's the impact to the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mariani, we do nothing with St. Paul other than fully fund St. Paul at a level of $5.943 million. Ms. Roberts, Mr. Shepard would confirm that. That they're just in the conforming language for the direct appropriation. And as Representative Keller said, we're doing the full appropriation for all the first class cities. They gave me word on the floor, even though I had to gouge other people. Your city aid is at full funding, and there's no language that addresses the St. Paul Teacher Fund.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Mariani,
Seifert, if we were to pull the language in the bill out, what would be the effect to the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund?
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marks might have to help me, but I think an unintended consequence of the Larson Amendment is we are deleting the appropriations for this as well, but maybe not. Is that in the first part, Mr. Shepard? There's just some conforming language that's pieced in with it. So I'm not sure what the consequences are. There's not a consequence because the appropriations are in the upfront part of the bill.
Representative Mariani, I think that I believe the appropriation is elsewhere. I mean, is a standing appropriation, and that if the Larson Amendment were to prevail, basically Minneapolis and St. Paul would still get their funding, the same amount of funding they'll get, frankly, if the amendment does not prevail, whether it prevails or not. The issue is the language surrounding the changes regarding the Minneapolis Teachers Fund. Mr. Marks has something to add, I guess.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani, the changes in Section 2, which changed the numbers for St. Paul and Minneapolis and also for Duluth, are deleting language earlier part of the section deletes some language, and then it's restated for Minneapolis and St. Paul. That's largely done. It's more technical than anything. Duluth is no longer receiving a subsidy because they're fully funded, I guess would be the term. And there's a language in existing law that then redistributed the Duluth money to Minneapolis and St. Paul. And this, I think that part of Section 2 could be characterized as largely technical,
right,
and ratifying what's already occurring. It's essentially bringing the law up to date with what's already occurring.
Okay, I'm sorry, Representative Mariani, did you have another point? Okay. Representative Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's important that I respond to Representative Krenke just so the record is really clear. The intent of my amendment is not to put my head in the sand, Representative Krenke. It's quite the contrary. It's for us to deal with the issue straight up and have all participants that should be participating in this participate. And Representative Kelleher's right. If the pressure is taken off this issue, the folks that lose on this are the retired teachers. And quite frankly, that's what's motivated me here. I hear from dozens of those folks who are terrified that their fund will go bankrupt and will be insolvent. And so I think it's important that we do something meaningful. This may be a piece of it. I just think that Representative Smith's bill is a more difficult thing to do, but it's the better thing to do. It's addressing the issue in a full way. And so I think, Mr. Chair, just so the committee's clear, the intent of my amendment is that we address the issue straight on and that we not just push it off for someone else to deal with.
Well, and Representative Larson, let me just say, and I think we're coming to a vote here, obviously, again, I oppose your amendment. I appreciate its intent. I have argued against taking the teacher fund money. For those who think that we need to leave the pressure on, let's just take the teacher fund money out, and then we'll have the issue before us in 2 or 3 years. But I'm not proposing that, and I'm not arguing for that. But you know, members, we need to do something here. This will save us some money. This will extend the length of time the fund will be solved, and it does not preclude us from doing Representative Smith's approach. And so I would ask you to vote against the Larson Amendment.
Let's vote.
Okay, all in favor of the Larson Amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments? To the bill, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Mr. Chair, this is not a perfect bill. It's the first finance bill that the committee will be reviewing and sending to the floor. It's the first bill the floor will consider. Considering what my committee had to work with, we have a 43% increase for National Guard. We have a 7% plus increase for Veterans Affairs. We funded their requests as much as possible, including full 100% tuition reimbursement, the reenlistment incentives, the National Guard Youth Camp, the new initiatives for veterans on a bipartisan basis, including Representative Mullery's for underserved veterans of populations that we think can help those veterans, a 46% increase to the small vets organizations. Yes, there are some cuts to bureaucracies and including the legislature itself. But members, I would say that my committee worked diligently as much as possible to put a good bill together, and I realize the state government finance bill is one of those that tends to be partisan and have trouble and so forth, but our committee voice voted this out on a bipartisan level. We will work with all members of all sides as we move towards conference committee to progress this bill and make it a good product considering the targets that we had to work with. But I would really appreciate members' support as we move this bill to the floor on Friday morning.
Okay, and members, I guess I'm going to ask for a roll call on the bill. Representative Kelleher and then Earhart. Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seifert, I do have another section of the bill I wanted to ask you about, and I didn't know that you were such a Timberwolves fan and you were so disappointed by the season as many of us were here. But the removal of the funding for Target Center that comes through the Amateur Sports Commission for the bonds paid on that is a long-standing agreement from the 1994 legislative session, I believe, actually, maybe special session even, and not special session, Representative Rukavina tells me. But Representative Seifert, I can't tell if this is the payback for the bonding bill issue with the Amateur Sports Commission, or if this is just the result of, frankly, a bad target situation for you with the amendment on the floor and what happened. But I think that you know, and I frankly, because of the way this is set up, what happens to these bonds is that if the state does not pay its $750,000 obligation that is spelled out in state law, we could default on these, and that could result in a number of things, and whether you like it or not, it's a previous legislature long before I got here, but it could result in the franchise being lost. It could result in the default on the bonds, and then what we deal with in terms of the obligation from the city, and with the local government aid cuts in the last couple of years, I am not so sure that I can support this sort of thing in terms of where the obligation goes, which is, I believe, to the property taxpayers in the city of Minneapolis. And I think that it's a very, you know, we've done this dance before, so I don't think it's a new dance to us tonight, but I do want you to clarify for the record what it was a result of, and you know, I can't support your bill because of that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelleher, great question. This is basically what I did when my target got gouged as much as it did, is I went to state government finance bills of the past, Representative Rukavina, and looked where money was found, and under, I don't know, it was yours, Representative Kahn's one of the state government finance bills of the 90s had this as one where they grabbed some money when they needed it to get to the floor and get to conference committee. And when we were literally scraping for nickels under the furniture, this is just something that I didn't know where I said I wouldn't cut the first class teacher's aid for you, and that I wouldn't gouge the attorney general for you folks, and that I would not play games with many other pieces of what's left that I have, and the choice is narrowed down to where I didn't have much of a choice.
And Mr. Chair,
Reverend Keller,
I think you get high marks for your work with the committee members, and that praise doesn't come lightly from me in terms of this process. I think you have done an excellent job. It's just that I want you to know, and I want it to be on the record, why I can't vote yes on this bill, because of this provision, and I believe the process on the teacher's pension issue.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm State Government Operations Article 2. We've got several items on that page, which is page 12. 10 and 11, what's the point of not letting even numbered years before April 1?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, that is to book, they're telling here, how much do we book in savings? When my, we save over $500,000 per month, and that was a way to book savings without laying your LA off, basically. And keep us live to conference committee.
Or LA, right?
You book savings by not having as many temp staff, housing reimbursement, which I know you don't get, mileage reimbursement, which I know you don't get. Pages hired, all the extra things that go with it. So it's the way to book savings to the legislature without laying staff.
Mr. Chairman, I suppose I don't get my apartment paid for then either.
Representative Earhart, that's where it came from.
So you come in on April 1 and adjourn May something or other?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, the plan would be come in on April 1st and get done when the Constitution kicks us out in late May. And I would point out to members, I have a historical schedule that if members would look at the last even year session we had was last year. We met for one of the longest periods for an off year session, and by records of the media and others, got the least amount done. So I'm more interested in quality than quantity when it comes to the legislature meeting. And part of this is that during my first term, when I came in 1996, we were done in the legislature in April. So it's just a matter of starting later and ending later, and getting the historical. We will be in the historical average, Representative Earhart, if we adopt this. So it's not a radical change. You served in the early 1990s when the legislature was done way before May in the second year. It's just a flip-flopping of we're going to start later and end later.
Okay, we have two other bills still, members. Representative Earhart.
I still have a couple more questions,
okay,
Mr. Chairman. We're doing the same thing to standing committees here to burn up legislative days. And then we get to Section 3, which talks about revenues from publication, media, and media productions. Now we're getting into naming rights and selling newspaper ads here. And I expect that the next thing is that some bigwig will offer something for the Senate Chamber's Bill Cooper Hall or something like that.
No.
Is that what we're getting into here?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, where do you see naming rights?
I'm saying that's part of what we're looking at here, Mr. Chairman.
Representatives, I'd like to have you go through the chair, if you would, kindly.
I didn't know he was still here, as I was looking up there. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative...
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, there's nothing for naming rights. What this is a bill that came forward that I had that was up a year or two previously. We worked with Representative Solberg to amend out anything like naming rights or so forth. And what it is if we have, for example, Session Weekly is the magazine that comes out. In the back of Session Weekly, the Chamber of Commerce could take out an ad and help defray the cost. That's another way of not throwing LAs out on the street. I thought the compromise that the committee worked out was very good here. There's nothing about naming rights. It is very simple, and it follows the same standards of advertising, for example, that DOT uses when they have advertising on the state map. So it helps defray costs for the legislature. If people want to take over the bill and find the money that I had to find so we could spend it in someone else's committee, you're welcome to take over this bill and find the cuts for the legislature without laying staff off that I had to find, Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Earhart,
I certainly appreciate that, but I think we're getting close to naming rights with that. But besides that, on page 16, section 12, lines 9 and 10, somehow I don't think I need my faith coordinated. I get enough of that in my local church, not only during the week, but on the weekends. And here we're going to get a coordinator in the governor's office to coordinate my faith. And what is the purpose of that?
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question. Mr. Chairman, I've been fighting this thing where my budget gets cut and I have people from across the street circling around asking for the appropriation for this, which there is no appropriation for this office. They have to basically find someone internally in the office to do this, which is to help people if they're in trouble, I guess, and coordinate with faith-based organizations to help them out. And so I have been the bad guy on this provision, and I said, okay, I'll let you, Representative Kahn and Solberg helped me with more provisions in this bill. They said, Governor Perpich used to come up and say, well, we want you to have a new position for whatever it was, jobs czar or something, and they said, we don't have any money for it. So they put in language that said, well, just do it. We're not giving you an appropriation. So what I'm doing here is I'm saying, if you guys want this, why don't you just do it? I don't have any money because I got gouged $14 million. So this is just basically telling them they can do something.
Well, I'm going to quit, but I'm sorry that I started reading this thing. I was hoping to vote for it. Thank you.
Representative Riccovina.
Mr. Chair, I just quickly, Representative Seifert, do you know how many layoffs are in here?
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riccovina, I don't have any kind of firm number on what layoffs might occur. What I do know is that the ratification of the state employee contracts are in this bill, so if we want to vote the bill down, someone else can try to resurrect that issue, which has to take place. We have to give the employees their steps, lanes, et cetera, that they've negotiated their health insurance. The only thing I for sure know about is the three FTEs from the Women's Commission, the three FTEs down on ground floor. But there could be others because of restraints or reductions. I don't know if public radio is going to have to lay someone off. I think that was equipment grants, so that's a capital expenditure.
Mr. Chair and
Representative Riccovina,
if we assume that there's a 3.2% inflation rate, and I don't know what the public employees are asking for, or already begin negotiating their next contract, but assuming they ask for 1 or 2%, do you have an idea what kind of layoffs would have to occur if that wasn't,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riccovina, that's difficult to tell under this bill because a lot of the state employment is spread out throughout the division. So you'll have Minsky and the U of M, which has more state employees in its division than the other ones, funded out of the higher ed bill. You will have all the various departments, the DOT workers under the DOT bill, the Health and Human Services folks under that bill. So this bill funds things like the Department of Revenue, Finance, etc., and I don't have any type of analysis because it really depends on what the bargaining is. We do have the voluntary salary savings language we worked out with the unions. That is voluntary. It's not mandatory. So it depends on that as well, how many people take voluntary salary savings leave, and then how many, in talking to Commissioner Ludeman's office, it depends on how many vacancies and attritional reductions they can make without laying people off. So it's really difficult to tell you a number.
Representative Clark.
I have to apologize. I wasn't in the committee. I was probably in another committee and wasn't getting ready for my business. I'm sorry. I just asked some questions.
I just wanted to ask Representative Seifert, you're removing the Commission on the Economic Status of Women, and what is the reason for that? Why are you...
Representative Clark, we sort of covered that before, but my target was reduced $14 million on the House floor. I don't know if you remember that or not, but it was. And $14 million under the governor means there are consequences. I said that on the House floor. I mean, I promised for your first-class teachers' pensions that I wouldn't touch, which would have been the easiest place to go, by the way, would be cut the first-class teacher pension subsidy from the general fund. We promised the National Guard 100% tuition reimbursement, which we have in the bill. We promised the veterans their initiative that they wanted, plus Mulery's on top of that. We tried not to play games with the constitutional officers, including Mr. Hatch's office. My options right now, the land sales are at the maximum number as testified to in our committee. I don't know where else to go, and a lot of my committee members felt that given the situation that we had to make reductions, and that was one that was in the mix.
Well, I'm looking.
Representative Clark.
I think it's $400-some thousand, right? For the commission.
440, I believe.
Okay. Now, Representative Earhart raised the question about the faith-based initiative. That's about 300,000.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, that was jettisoned. It's just language saying they can do it. There is no appropriation. That was why the people across the street are mad, because I don't have money for anybody. I don't have money for their faith-based thing. I don't have money for the Women's Commission. I don't have money for amateur sports. I had to grab the Target Center thing. And when I said on the floor there were consequences for taking $14 million and moving it to K-12, I wasn't kidding around. That wasn't an easy target for our committee to meet, but our committee did the best job it could. Representative Kahn and Solberg gave me not this idea, but they gave me some other ideas and tried to meet that target. Without those two, I wouldn't have been able to make $14 million, quite frankly.
And the $6 million some from that comes from the sale of public lands, where it's going into the general fund. Does that come?
Yeah, the biggest, yes, that is to help meet the target, and the biggest parcel identified is in Anoka County, and they testified to that.
Any other discussion?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry, you have another question, Representative Clark. Go ahead.
I was just thinking about the Commission on Economic Status of Women that does a lot of really important documentation and work that's used in a lot of legislation, and I think they testified. Did they testify here today? Okay.
They testified.
I'm really sorry, I missed it, but who's going to do that work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, probably the same as in the other states that don't have it, where you can request information from them. House Research has very capable people. The Census Bureau is where most of that information comes from, and the compiling and data can be done at request by a member. And the last I checked, we have very capable staff who can do it. It's tough choices, Representative Clark. I understand in your division you're struggling with some of the reductions there, too, but... That's the situation we face.
Well, then we get to do it. That's not...
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Seifert renews his motion that House File 1481, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Knobloch?
Yes.
Dempsey?
Yes.
Abler?
Yes.
Abrams?
Yes.
Anderson? Beard?
Yes.
Bradley? Iskins?
Yes.
Carlson?
No.
Clark?
No.
Dorman?
Yes.
Dorn?
Yes.
Earhart?
Yes.
Grayling?
No.
Sumter?
Yes.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Guilty?
Yes.
Holbert?
Yes.
Huntley? Kelleher?
No.
Cleansing?
Yes.
Cranky?
Yes.
Larson?
No.
Mariani?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Nernis?
Yes.
Botramba?
Yes.
Osment? Hamer?
Pass.
Rukavina?
Pass.
Bruce?
Yes.
Seifert?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Solberg?
Yes.
Sikora?
Yes.
Vandeveer?
No.
Wiginius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Mr. Chair, Riccobino votes no.
Riccobino votes no?
Okay.
Riccobino votes no. Anyone else wish to change their vote? There are 23 ayes, 10 nays. The bill is passed. Next bill up is the higher education bill. We will please exit if you're not interested in that one as quickly as you can. We'll be moving to the higher education bill right away.
No.
Tommy, did you break or something? Did you follow Lisa?
No, I did not. Okay, we're going to get started on House File 1385, the Higher Education Bill. Members can take their seats. Audience can either exit if you're not interested in this bill or take your seat, please.
I said, I'll come back.
Representative Norris moves that House File 1385 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad we're finally in front of the committee. It's been a long 3 hours. I first want to start by saying I want to thank all of the members of my committee. Six of them serve on this committee, so just to know that we've really appreciated working in a bipartisan way on this bill. Ways and Means is interested in the financial aspect, but I just wanted to go through just a couple of quick things that I want to highlight that are in this higher education bill that we're going to hopefully pass tonight. The changes that I just wanted to highlight, this eliminates the enrollment adjustment for MinSCU and the University of Minnesota, makes some changes in the process of selecting the University of Minnesota Board of Regents. It leaves the state grant program intact and increases the maximum tuition, fees, and related expenses that may be considered as part of the state grant program. Also adds a ninth semester for the state grant eligibility for students. Those are just a couple of the issues of the of this bill. Doug Berg is here to kind of walk through the financial aspects of House File 1385, and I'd ask him to do that at this time.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chairman, members, members should have in their pack an 8-page spreadsheet on legal-sized paper that goes through the financials for the bill. I'm not going to walk through it line by line. I'll try to give you a fairly quick summary of the financials and the changes in them. Most members know the higher ed bill, unlike many of the state department type bills, kind of block grants large chunks of money to the U of M and MinSCU. So it's, I'll go through it at a pretty summary level. The bill also has different funding levels under options A and options B in the House targets. Under option A, this bill spends a total general fund expenditure for the next biennium of $2,750,468,000. That is a total increase of $202 million over fiscal five spending levels, and it represents a total reduction of $2.2 million from the adjusted base. In summary, the Higher Education Services Office gets funded at $347.6 million in either option A or option B. I'll mention some differences in option B later, but the Higher Education Services Office, the funding package and change items are the same in both options, and the funding level is the same as the governor's recommendation for the HESO budget. Within HESO, the governor's change items other than the financial aid program are all accounted for in this. It has the Rochester University development. It has state grant software rewrite and the accountability measurement initiatives that the governor proposed, and as well as some reductions to funding in the tuition reciprocity program and the learning network. The tuition reciprocity reduction does not affect the program. It's surplus funds. Within the financial aid package, the House bill under both A and B spends the same amount of money as the governor, the current base for the program of $281 million. It does make some different choices than the governor. It reduces the student share of the cost of instruction to 45%. It raises the four-year tuition maximums, and it decreases the two-year tuition maximums to the highest public two-year tuition and fees adjusted for inflationary increases in the next 2 years. And then grant eligibility is extended to 9 semesters in this. Again, all those changes happen within the current base of the program. There's not new money going into the program to fund that. Moving on, under the option A, MNSCU is funded at $1,197.6 billion. That is an increase of $102.3 million over the fiscal 5 spending level, and it is a reduction of 28.5 from their adjusted base. Within MNSCU, there is some of the money is specified for items that were in their request and in the governor's recommendations. Particularly, I would mention to members that the governor's initiative on centers of excellence is funded, as well as the farm and small business management initiatives that the system had at $3 million. Minnesota Online, which is the MNSCU online offerings for coursework, is funded at $5 million, and there is a $13.9 million competitive salary initiative that was proposed by MNSCU. Moving on to the university and option A, the university is funded at $1.204 billion. That is also an increase of $102.3 million over the fiscal 5 spending level, and is an increase of $28.5 million over their adjusted base. Again, within the university line, some of the items that were in their request are funded, including parts of the Biosciences for Healthy Initiatives item, the competitive compensation item, research support initiatives, the university's initiative for preparing students for the 21st century economy, and in both options A and B, the Mayo University Genomics Partnership is funded at $15 million. And the smallest account in the bill is the Mayo Foundation, where we have capitation grants for medical school attendees and medical residents at Mayo. That's funded at $2.8 million for the biennium. That is the same as the governor's recommendation and is no change from their base. Again, the total in option A is $2.75 billion, which is a total change of $202 million from the fiscal 5 spending level, an increase of 7.9%, and it is a total of a negative 0.1% from the adjusted base, negative $2.2 million. Option B, will summarize very shortly. It's in Article 5 of the bill, and what it does is it adds $25.5 million to the total spending in the bill, bringing it up to $2,775,918,000. And that additional funding is split evenly between the university and MNSCU, each of them getting an additional $12.725 million. that brings the total in option B to $227.6 million in new money from the fiscal 5 expenditure level, 8.9%, and $23.2 million over the collective adjusted basis for an increase of 0.8%. And, Mr. Chair, that's pretty much the summary of the financials in the bill.
All right. Representative Nornes, I know of one, what I believe is a technical amendment, the A11 amendment. Would you like to move that now?
I'd like to move that at this time. Correct.
Representative Nornes moves the A11 amendment. Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair, members, this is strictly a, this language replaces the language that's in the bill on lines 15 through 35. That's the old language. And this is agreed to by the university and the Mayo Foundation and I believe the governor's office. So this is the language that they, you know, would like changed in the bill.
A discussion to the A11 amendment, which I understand is a technical amendment. Right. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A11 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Discussion to the bill. Representative Nornes. Or others.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman and members, you know, sometimes one door gets closed and another door opens. And for me, the door that opened was the opportunity to serve on two committees I haven't served on before, the Higher Education Finance Committee and the Transportation Finance Committee. I would like to thank Representative Nornes and all the members of the committee, both Republican and DFL, and all the staff, because you know, I can only speak for myself, but I learned a lot. Sometimes I hear things, Representative Carlson, that I should hear and that I may not want to hear. And I thank you, and I thank the DFL members on the committee for that opportunity. I think that the work product of the committee was bipartisan in nature. We certainly would have appreciated a little higher target. But at the end of the day, I think that Representative Nornes and all the members of the committee worked hard to put forward a work product that that the entire committee, regardless of how they vote on the bill as it goes forward, can be proud of. So, Representative Nornes, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I answered my own question by reading on further. Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question and I'd like to make a comment. Representative Nornes, you and I had a conversation during committee about the Midwest Higher Education Commission, both publicly, and then we had a short private conversation. It was my understanding that that would be corrected somewhere in the process. What I'm talking about, there's a very minor dues increase that the bill didn't cover, and the reason I was particularly interested in that is that Minnesota is the host state, and it was very competitive. There are 10 states that are members in terms of getting them relocated here, and for the dollars involved and with all the employees being here rather than another state paying taxes, it's kind of a wash. We gain a certain amount of prestige with them being here. They're located at the University of Minnesota campus. They pay rent there. I would hope that this bill moves forward for our conversation, that that correction that we talked about would take place. I quite honestly expected that it would probably be here today. But I didn't prepare an amendment because I assumed that the author might come in with one.
Representative Carlson, I think we're talking about, what, $16,000 over
right.
The planning?
Yeah. So a relatively minor amount relative to having them locate here and pay taxes here and what have you.
Mr. Chair and
Representative Norris
and Mr. Carlson, Representative Carlson, it's my understanding that the Senate has that language in their higher education bill, so the funding is there. So we're still looking on this side. But as I told you before, I'm confident it'll be worked out as we go through the process. We don't want to, you know, have a past due bill since you and I serve on that compact.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carlson.
I guess when we say work it out, it could have been interpreted a variety of ways, and that sounds to me like we're planning to cave to the Senate. Is that what you're saying?
We have to give them
something. Which is fine with me as long as the end product turns out all right. Mr. Chairman, I did want to make a couple of comments relative to the bill, if I might, because it sounds like we're probably going to move toward a vote fairly quickly, being that there are no other amendments. I did share with Representative Abrams' comments. You know, it's a good committee to work with. I've served on it for many years. Our underlying problem was the target. Some of us at various points through the process, as you very well know, tried to advocate for higher targets, and unfortunately that didn't prevail. One of the major concerns, probably the major concern that I have with the bill, is that we now have 6 straight years of double-digit tuition increases in the state of Minnesota. Last biennium, I forget the exact percentage, but it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 28% to 30% as the result of $385 million in cuts. This biennium, we're going to again see double-digit tuition increases. We did have testimony by Laura King the other day that when the bill was up in the division, that the funding level that's in the bill will see another 9% to 10% tuition increase each year of the biennium. University of Minnesota, the numbers, I understand it will be another 8% each year of the biennium. If Representative Huntley was here, he would probably point out very quickly that in the past 4 years, tuition at the University of Minnesota Duluth, he indicated, has gone up 62%. And so I'm very concerned about access to our higher education institutions, and also what that means for students, not only the ability of some to perhaps attend or perhaps not be able to finish in a timely manner, having to work more and therefore carry lighter loads and take more time than many of us would like to see necessary to earn a degree. That time seems to be extending out. Minsky just did a report about student debt, and that's skyrocketing as well. So I do think we really have to think long and hard as an institution in terms of what our partnership is with our colleges and universities. When we invest in young people, when we invest in adults that may be attending our colleges and universities, when I'm talking young people, I'm talking now K-12, right through graduate education, we make our state stronger. And I really think we've been stepping backward these past few years when we've seen, like I say, 6 great years of double-digit tuition increases and what that means for people who want to attend.
Representative,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Norris.
Mr. Chairman and members, both systems, to my knowledge, have not decided what the tuition increases are going to be. So I remain optimistic that they're going to find a way so that they can keep it to a minimum. At the same time, we changed the student grant program so that it will help students in two ways. They will be receiving additional grants, or the additional funds, and we also added that ninth semester. So for those that aren't able to finish in 4 years, they would have that additional time, or they'd be eligible for a grant. So I think this bill represents, again, progress. I appreciate the leadership of the administration and others that allowed us to actually have a reasonable target that we could work with. And after years of maybe declining state support, I think this probably begins a trend where the state is picking up a better, you know, a fair share of the educational costs for our students. So I urge your support, members, and unless there are other questions.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Nornes. I just had a little conversation with the folks up in the audience here, and do I understand that more recently than this week, perhaps this week, that there was a cut in the appropriations to the main body of the university here, and that there was some shuffling of monies with Mayo, which puts the University of Minnesota out of balance with Minsky. They both had and I haven't found the figures here yet, but they both had the same amount
right
appropriated at one time.
Representative Earhart.
Representative Norris.
Mr. Chair, I suppose it's how you look at it. The amount that we talked about that Mr. Burke presented, that represents the amount that's going to the university, the $102 million. From that, $15 million was allocated to that genomics project. And that did come at kind of the last hour, and that's perhaps unfortunate. But it had to be funded, and our committee was where they chose to fund it. So you can look at it as a cut. It is a university program, so I think that's the rationale for doing it that way.
Well, Mr.
Representative Earhart.
And Representative Norris, that means perhaps the drives up specifically the tuition costs at the university, I would think.
Representative Earhart.
Representative Norris.
Sure. I can't tell you what that represents. I can tell you that thanks to an amendment added in our committee yesterday, that $15 million remains in the base as ongoing money for the university. So it's a temporary adjustment, but it goes forward.
Okay, and one more question, Mr. Chairman. In the first page of the bill summary, they talk about $4,314,000 from the Health Care Access Fund to balance this thing. Now, that's the money that is provided by provider taxes, in effect. That health care, that's money coming out of the provider tax money.
Representative Norris.
Again, Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, that is correct, but it funds the university medical program, medical school. That's what it's used for.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's what the plan was designed for originally, but you are trying to balance things here, and it maybe makes some people happy, but it doesn't make a lot of the providers very happy that are constantly getting their money's shifted elsewhere from what I'm playing Huntley tonight, from where they're supposed to go.
Representative Earhart.
Representative Norris.
And Mr. Chair, I don't mean to cut you off, but that apparently it's not a new use of that money. It's been used for that for some time. So it's not a new use of that money. It's just something we have.
Representative Huntley. Or Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, my point is that shouldn't have been done in the past. It shouldn't be doing with it now what it wasn't designed to be done with. But that's the way the world is today. With no new taxes, you got to steal it from somewhere.
Again,
Representative
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, again, that is what it's been used for, and I'm not sure for how long, but it's, again, not a new thing. We just decided to do this year.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to make a few comments very quickly, but I also do want to acknowledge, I thought Representative Dornis ran a pretty fair committee process. I had a bill that was heard, a number of us did. Those bills aren't in this bill, but who knows, you know, we still have a few weeks left in the session. But I thought it was a well-run and very respectful committee that we had, with a lot of good give and take. Having said that, there are some issues with this bill, and Representative Earhart actually put his finger on one with the genomics funding. That came as a big surprise and a shock to committee members. I suspect the chair himself was one of those who was surprised by having to swallow that worthy program, but something that, frankly, we had no hearings in our committee during the session because the action was all happening in another committee, and somewhere along the process, or perhaps lack of process, the decision was made in the 11th hour that we would swallow that in our targets. And I can tell you that the University of Minnesota was very forceful in testifying that this was not helpful to them. Both they and the Minsky system early on came in, and in fact Minsky passed out the wheel, the calculating the cost wheel, and I thought they were very clear about being able to lay out for us what happens if particular parts of their requests were funded, and tying that to tuition increases. And I think Representative Carlson is perhaps not very far off, you know, quite possibly seeing another 2 years of double-digit tuition increases. You know, serendipity, it just so happens that I've got with me here, and Mr. Chair, this is no reflection on lack of interest in your committee, but I attempt to do some constituent mail while I'm here listening carefully to bills.
And, you must be the only one, Representative Mariani.
The only one. And, Mr. Chair, this is from a constituent who lives on the west side of St. Paul. And he writes, it's a phone message, and he called to say he supports affordable higher ed because it is needed for the states to be for the state to be economically viable. He had to drop a class because he couldn't afford it, even though he has been working really hard. I mean, I couldn't say it better than that. These students in our systems have been facing, they've really been up against the wall for the past few years. And Representative Nordis, in all fairness, your bill, I think, begins to contribute a little bit to trying to turn that trend around. But the real issue is that the devastation has been so harsh over the last two bienniums that even turning it around still isn't... I really think I'm not going to be able to respond to this gentleman and say that tuition increases are going to stop for the next couple of years here, and it's going to be tough for him to be able to move forward with his education, something that we all want him to do. You know, there's some good things here, I think, in this bill in terms of starting to turn some things around. There are some things that we all should pause and really wonder. And I wonder, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nornis, and perhaps Mr. Byrd can help here, because we didn't talk about the policy stuff in the bill, but what do we do with enrollment adjustments? If you could tell us what we do with the statutory language for enrollment adjustment for the systems, I think that's important for members to know.
Okay. Representative Nornis.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani, this bill includes the removal of our language dealing with the enrollment adjustment. So going forward, we will not see that. And the day we had the testimony on that bill, it seemed to be there was consensus that it was kind of broken and wasn't working very well. So it doesn't come with a lot of opposition. I think we need to move forward and try to do something better.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Mariani,
Chair, members, it's important to note that when we miscalculated on our end, we rushed pretty quickly to take money back from the systems in the enrollment adjustment, and they were really counting coming forward this year in their request to have us meet that statutory commitment that we made to these systems to be able to adjust our payments to them based on increased enrollments. And, you know, we probably do need to do this a better way. I think we agree on that. But, you know, boy, a couple of months ago, both those systems came forward with us and they waived that statute in front of us and said, you're going to meet that commitment that you've made to us, right? Because, you know, the language works both ways. You know, a few years ago, they met that commitment by being charged back for under enrollment per our projections. So we still have a long way to go, I think, to be able to make our higher ed system whole. I hope this is a good start. But Representative Nornis, as much as I respect you and the way you run a good committee, at this point I can't vote for this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Norris.
Representative Mariani, I just wanted to add one thing. HESO has been instructed to work with the systems to develop another better method.
of funding those two systems. So I hear what you're saying, and I wish you could be with us.
Any other discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Nornes renews his motion that House File 1385, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed. The next and final bill on the agenda for this evening is Senate File 4. And members, as you're looking at Senate File 4 in your folders, I've been informed that you have an old engrossment. We have the new engrossment that we are going to pass out to you right now. So discard the old engrossment, and I think that the amendments that are in your file, however, are to the new engrossment.
Yeah, you said it as amendments, so it must have been.
They're giving us a new one.
No, no, the one of my friends.
No,
Marty had a good bill.
And Representative Davids, please come forward.
It challenges me to read it and determine why it's not right.
There you go.
I don't know if there's any food.
There's not much down
there. Members, while we're getting these unofficial engrossments passed out and everything, I'm going to call just a 2-minute recess just to get ourselves organized. 2-minute recess.
Can we get dinner?
Yeah, are you buying a Dixie?
Yeah, let's get back.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Take that to the revised.
I went out. Thank you. You know what? Come on. Thank
I think what you should do is
To reconvene the meeting. We will get started here just a second. I will talk to you in a minute, Representative Hamilton. Representative Davids, members, why don't you take your seats. We'll get started here for the last bill of the evening. Chair will move that Senate file number 4 be referred to the General Register. Representative Davids, could you explain Senate file 4?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a very important bill for the entire state of Minnesota. It's Senate File 4, also known as the Senator Dallas-Sams E20 ethanol bill. As you'll see, this is a bill that is very good for the environment. It's a renewable fuel. And as Governor Plenty has said, we are to have a declaration of independence from foreign oil. The governor wants Minnesota to become the Saudi Arabia of renewable fuels. And this bill goes a long way toward that end. Basically what the bill does, Mr. Chairman and members, is it says that we will be at a 20% average of ethanol use in the state of Minnesota by December 31st of 2010. We can attain that in one of several ways. If we attain that by using E10 and an increase in the use of E85, and we come to an average of 20%, then we will have met our goal. And nothing else will kick in or change. If we do not make that by December 31st, 2010, then by the year 2015, we will have a mandate going to E20. Now, one of the big concerns that many members and many people have had regarding this bill is, you know, what happens to the car's warranty? It's a very, very important point. Well, I want to be very clear that in the bill, there's a provision that says the EPA must do a certain test to ensure that E20 is a safe fuel for these automobile engines. Mr. Chairman and members, there is a few amendments that have been added on, and I'd like to go through the summary here. We have some provisions in there that would help get the E85 going by having a program to have payments made to petroleum retailers to put in E85 pumps. And, of course, that would help us raise the total content of ethanol that's used. If you look at Section 7, we look at petroleum replacement promotion. It sets the goal of at least 20% of liquid fuel sold in Minnesota to be derived from renewable sources. And I want to let members know that it's not just ethanol that counts towards that 20%. We also have a program in Minnesota for soy diesel. And if we... That goes towards the renewable fuels of the 20% also, and that's a point that has not been very well explained over the last few weeks regarding hitting that 20% goal. So with that, it's very simple in that if we make the 20% by the increased use of E85, we've met our goal. Before any of this can go into place, the Environmental Protection Agency has to approve E20 as a fuel. Testimony in Ag Committee was very clear that we could go up to E23. Some people even testified that we could go to E50 with no harmful effect on a car's engines. As far as small engines and watercraft and I think it's aircraft, they can still get non-oxygenated fuel. We're not changing that at all in the bill, so that was a concern of some. We're not changing that at all. Mr. Chairman, I have two amendments at this point. The first amendment has to do with a plant in Heron Lake. Representative Hornstein had an amendment in transportation finance that would basically say we came to compromise. It said that Heron Lake could go ahead with their plant with a clean coal fluidized bed process to power their plant, but that no plants after that could do that, could use coal. After we put the amendment on and put it in the bill, we found that Heron Lake couldn't use coal, but every other plant in the future could use coal. Well, that was not the intent of Representative Hornstein, and so the A30 amendment would correct that so that Heron Lake, which is far along in their permitting process and has met all the requirements up to this point that they've had to, could go ahead and continue their project, but in the future that wouldn't be allowed. So, Mr. Chairman, if someone could move the A30 amendment.
Representative Holbrook moves the A30 amendment.
Move the A30 amendment, and as you can see on page 8 of the bill, if you read the language, it actually does the exact opposite of what Representative Hornstein wanted to do in that in exempting a plant, a coal-fired plant that has a permit pending before. So we got to turn that around.
All right. Discussion to the A30 amendment. Representative Crickey. Oh, it should be in your packets, members, in the Senate File 4 Manila folder. Yeah, members, we did. We had the wrong. We had an earlier version of SF4 in there, but the amendments are correct. So, in SF4, the amendments are okay. Match it up with the other bill that was handed out, the A30 amendment. Yes, sir. Other discussion of the A30 amendment. See no discussion. All in favor of the A30 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thanks. Motion prevails. The A30 amendment is adopted. And Representative David, the chair will offer the A31 amendment. Can you explain the A31 amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for offering that. Basically, what that does, there was language put in the bill on the long path that it's been on that basically put, I like what the language does. It puts $20,500,000 to be annually appropriated from the General Fund of the Commissioner of Agriculture for purpose of ethanol producer payments and grants for petroleum distributors and retailers for installation of ED5 fuel handling dispensing equipment. It's like I died and gone to heaven. I mean, that's wonderful stuff, but it's kind of a budget breaker, and some of that language is actually in the ag finance and ag and natural resource finance, but not to that amount. But it really doesn't belong in this bill, and it's not something that we should be looking at tonight. I would remove that, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I support the amendment, but I think the better amendment is to delete the rest of Section 3. So Section 3 pays every gas station in the state $15,000 for putting in a pump. I mean, you know, I'm very supportive of the work of the Transportation Finance Committee, but, you know, I don't know why we have to be subsidizing some of the biggest and wealthiest corporations in the world, and I'm normally not one who uses rhetoric like that, but do we really have to pay Holiday $15,000 per pump? Do we really have to pay, I mean, British Petroleum, $15,000 per station. I don't know, but I think that's the better amendment, Mr. Chairman, but I'll support your amendment.
Okay, well, let's go with my amendment here, and then we can certainly talk about other amendments. Any other discussion to the A31 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A31 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A31 amendment is adopted. All right, are there other amendments? Does anyone, a representative of Vanderveer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move to delete on page 1, subdivision 1. I don't know that we ever found all this stuff.
Chairman. Okay, Representative, just a minute. Representative Vanderveer makes an oral amendment, page 1, delete subdivision 1, which would be lines 12 through 24. Representative Vanderveer, is that correct?
Yes, and I request a roll call.
And Representative Vanderveer requests a roll call. Representative Davids.
It's so partisan, Mr. Chairman. I would respectfully speak against that amendment because even though Representative Vanderveer hasn't found that, I have found that. I have found that. And I just soon keep that in.
Someone is
Representative Krenke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We know that the Senate loves to pontificate and have all sorts of flowery language, but we in the House, Representative Davids, try to run a much leaner, meaner type of machine over here. Less verbiage in the statutes, and that's why we take out the legislative findings and statements of purpose and all those wonderful things that the people with the powdered wigs like.
Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want members to be careful using the word pontificate, you know, with the recent events going on. We should be respectful of our brethren. But I do have a question for the author, Mr. Chair, since we're talking about dependence on imported oil. I'm a co-author on the bill, and coming from, I used to have Kunratsanoka, and I have the city of Ramsey now, which I discovered has cornfields in it, and soybeans, which I need to learn something about this, and I'm an ag guy now, so. But I do have another constituent who's an engineer who tells me that he's unclear about the benefits of ethanol and less tankers coming or not, and I seem to think that they are. It is more like a good idea, and I'm a co-author, but can you give me just the real thumbnail sketch on what the benefit ratio is from ethanol to saving gas or saving imported oil? I don't need the long version. Just so I can be a suburban ag guy, just so I know what to say.
I've got about 7 pages here.
Like the one paragraph would be good.
Or maybe just a couple sentences. Basically, when it comes down to it, you know, some of the anti-ethanol type folks have been saying it takes 1.5 parts of ethanol or BTUs to make one of ethanol. And throughout the committee testimony, right now we're at about, I believe, for every gallon of oil used, we produce 1.72 BTUs or equivalents. So about one of oil to 1.72. So we're way ahead and we're getting better.
Thank you.
Representative Krenke? Oh, I guess I have you on.
I made your point earlier.
Okay, other discussion to the Vanderveer Amendment. Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Dempsey?
No.
Abler?
No.
Abrams?
Yes.
Anderson? Beard?
Aye.
Bradley? Diskins?
Aye.
Carlson?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Dorman? Doring? Earhart?
No.
Bradley?
Aye.
Gunther?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hilty? Holbert?
Yes.
Huntley? Kelleher? Glensing?
Yeah. No, I said no.
Oh, no. Krenke?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Mariani?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Nornes?
No.
Butramba?
No.
Osmond? Hamer? Rukavina? Ruth?
No.
Seifert? Smith?
Aye.
Solberg? Sikora?
No.
Vanderveer?
Aye.
Virginius?
Aye.
Walker?
Yes.
Seifert votes no.
Knobloch votes no.
wondering, where's the language about the 15,000 that they have?
There being 15 ayes and 12 nays, the motion is adopted. The amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Discussion to the bill. Any discussion to Senate File 4 as amended? Representative Prinky.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis. I'm not clear. When the goal is to reduce gasoline usage, does it matter in terms of how we reduce it in order to meet this requirement? I mean, can we use bicycles? Can we use hybrid vehicles? Can we use hydrogen-powered vehicles? Can we walk? I mean, is this can you give us just a little better understanding of how we reach the goal?
Representative David, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Prinky. Most of those things you mentioned don't factor in. It's strictly on how much gasoline is used, that at least 20% of that is renewable, whether it be biodiesel or ethanol, and this is mainly ethanol. So if it's using some other form, that would not factor into the equation.
So,
Representative Prinky.
So, Mr. Chairman and Representative Davis, so if we use hydrogen-powered vehicles don't factor in, is that correct?
Representative Davids.
And Representative Krinke, I do not believe that would factor in. There would have to be some petroleum used in some way, I believe. I'm going to ask for some help here.
Representative Gunther, can you help us with this?
I think I can. Mr. Chairman, in the regulated industries, the University of Minnesota has to report on the progress of hydrogen as a fuel for vehicles, and they said their best guess is for a commercial application to be 30 years from now.
Representative Davids.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Krinke, on the E20 part, that would not factor in.
Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davids, tell me a little bit about on page 12, starting with line 19, talks about the subdivision expires December 31st, 2008, blah, 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 blah. What's that about, or where did that language come from?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Dorman. That's a very, very important part of this bill because that takes care of many of the concerns that members and citizens and everyone has about what does this do, you know, for the warranties for my vehicle. If by that date, December 31st, 2008, the EPA has not approved E20 as a legal fuel, then this entire bill just magically disappears. So before that time, if they do say that E20 is a safe fuel that they've tested, and there's a list of different tests that they have to go through, then the rest of the bill would kick in. So that's a very important piece there that, you know, right now if you try to use E20, it's an illegal fuel. You can't use it. So by going with the E20, we have to have that approved by the Environmental Protection Agency.
Representative Berman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, we're working here on Senate File Number 4, and I believe this bill is passed. I think Senate File Number 4, help me if I'm wrong, but I think it's passed the Senate. Is that language in that bill?
Representative Davids.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dorman, I believe in the original bill that the Senate passed over, the E20 language was in there just that, you know, the EPA had approved E20. Amended in Transportation Finance with some additional language at the behest of the auto manufacturers that would specifically list out some of the tests that they needed to do. Basically, they took the federal rules and regulations and put them in the bill. So that's where that is.
Representative Dorman and others, actually, if you're interested in the Senate language, that is, I believe, what is in your folder or was in your folder when it was first passed out. So you should actually have a copy of the Senate language here as well if you're interested. Other discussion? while you're looking at that. All right, I see no further discussion.
Is there a roll call, Mr. Chair?
Representative Dorman?
Yes.
There's not a roll call, no.
I have one.
You want a roll call? Okay. All right.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Davids?
I hope it goes better than the last roll call.
I don't. Representative Davids, I'm sure you do. This is on passage, Representative Seifert. Any other discussion to the bill as amended? Chair will renew his motion that Senate File 4, as amended, be referred to the General Register without further recommendation. Clerk will take the roll.
Dempsey?
Yes.
Abler?
Yes.
Abrams?
No.
Anderson? Beard?
Aye.
Bradley? Diskins?
No.
Carlson?
Aye.
Clark?
No.
Dorman?
Yes.
Dorn?
Yes.
Earhart?
No.
Bradley?
No.
Gunther?
Yes.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Hilty? Holbert?
No.
Huntley? Kelleher?
Yes.
Lindsay?
No.
Krinke?
No.
Larson?
No.
Mariani?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Nernis?
Yes.
Otremba?
Yes.
Osmet? Hamer? Rukavina? Bruce?
Yes.
Seifert?
Yes.
Smith?
No.
Solberg? Sikora?
Yes.
Vandeveer?
No.
Bugenius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Knobler?
Yes.
I've got the doors locked.
There being 16 ayes and 14 nays, the bill is passed. With that, members, the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.